listen to the Black Guy Who Tips podcast because Rod and Karen are hot.
I wrote this record while 30,000 feet in the air. Steward is complimenting me on my nappy hair. If I can fuck up in front of all of these passengers, they'll probably think I'm a terrorist. Eat my asparagus, then I'm asking her thoughts of a young nigga. Fast money and your freedom, a crash dummy for diamonds. I know you're dying to meet him. I'll probably die in a minute. Just bury me with 20 bitches, 20 million in a comp town fit in a hole up. Hey, welcome to the Black Guy Who Tips podcast. Your host, Rod and
Karen.
And we're in the house on a Sunday, a snowy Sunday down here in Charlotte.
Yeah, they said it was going to snow. I was like, yeah, whatever. It's been 80 degrees. What the fuck?
Man, I don't know. The weather under Trump has just been irrational and unpredictable. I mean,
it is. And I don't care what nobody said. You can't tell me it's not no global warming when Charlotte, North Carolina has gotten more snow than Chicago all winter.
Well, Chicago's supposed to get 6 inches today, so I guess we're going to catch up. Yeah, it's the Blackout Tips. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Podomatic. Just search the Blackout Tips. We'll come up wherever you listen to podcasts. Leave us 5-star reviews on iTunes and Stitcher, and we promise we'll read them on the air as long as they're nice. The official weapon of the show is
the taser,
an unofficial sport.
It's bullet ball
and bullet ball extreme. And this podcast is double sponsored today. This podcast is sponsored by Shadow Dial Productions, who supports artist Jenna Rose Simon. Jenna, who's been on several of these live in the studio podcasts, just released a new book with some great artwork depicting the life and struggles that we all go through, and is climbing up on the hot new sellers list on Amazon. And we will make sure to have the link in the chat, but it's called Unbroken, an art book, my journey so far, plus 20 feel good drawing activities. And I'll put the link in the chat room right now, but yeah, it's amazing all the people that we get to know through Dexter. And it's always, you know, it's always wild to just how talented so many different people are, you know. So good for her, man. And like I said, I'll put the link in the show notes and all that stuff, and you guys can check it out. All right, and we're also brought to you by Bevel. Of course, Bevel is the first and only shaving system designed specifically for coarse, curly hair and sensitive skin. Step up your shave game and say goodbye to razor bumps. Check out GetBevel.com and use code... Oh, wait. Just check out GetBevel.com/TBGWT. Sorry, using an old copy of this thing. I got to open up the new one. But, yeah, go to GetBevel.com/TBGWT, guys. Get yourself hooked up. All right.
Is that the last sponsor?
For today, yes.
Oh, okay. Before you go into, I guess news or whatever it is, I have two random thoughts, if that's okay.
Of course.
Okay. They're real short, but they were just things that was, on my mind and I was thinking about, and I just happened to jot them down. There's a lot of shit that happened. A lot of times I don't jot them down, so I'm gonna start jotting them down more. The other day you got battery operated toothbrush.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, I've had a couple of them. That was my third one,
right? So I didn't know. So y'all, I'm old school. My mom was like, I'm not paying, you know, you better get the toothbrushes, not 9 cents. I'm not paying, you know, $4, $5, $8, $9, $10 for nothing to brush your teeth. So I've always manually brushed my teeth even as an adult. So I've never had a power battery operated electronic toothbrush whatsoever. So I went and I tried Roger. Why did it feel like a vibrator in my mouth?
Mm-hmm. That's why I like them, you know, get up in there and get stimulating them teeth,
right? Because I put that thing in my mouth and I was like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, it feels good. I actually upgraded to the new one I got now. It not just vibrates, but at the top it spins almost like it rotates around almost like a tire or something. Mm-hmm. To polish your teeth as well. I love that damn thing.
Yeah, and you know what, I think the rotating thing threw me off, because I was like, okay, it's shaking now, shake it and it's rotating. I was like, I'm glad that my teeth enjoyed the action, but I did not enjoy the action whatsoever. So I was like, no, this is not for me.
Gotta treat yourself, you know, when you get, it's funny because life is so weird where, you know, you can't always make the money to take a vacation to Charleston.
Right.
Or you can't always take the time to to, you know, just do all the nice things in life. But it's funny, you spend like $5 extra, $6 extra on a toothbrush, and now when you brush your teeth, you know, you got all kinds of vibrations and spinning and and shit going on. It just costs you a few extra dollars, and it's just a nice way to treat your teeth and your smile and your, and all that stuff. And you know that that is something that you live with every day.
That's true. And I was looking into them because, you know, with me having braces and all, they said that those type of toothbrushes actually are best for people with braces to help get a lot of the plaque and tartar off around your teeth, and it does, you know, less build up and things like that. You know, it's just easier for you. And I didn't realize they said that whenever you have an electronic toothbrush, it actually, even if you don't have braces, they said it actually gets more tartar and plaque off. So
I mean, that's probably why it costs more.
Right.
I mean, that's the thing with all this shit. All this shit costs more. I mean, it is better for you, but people just can't afford it all the time, you know? Right. Like, so it's little areas where you can treat yourself that adds tremendously to the quality of your life without thinking about it, such as toilet tissue. People, I don't understand how people go cheap on toilet tissue if they can afford better toilet tissue. If you can afford it, trust me, it's worth it. Your butt will thank you. If I get better toothpaste now, if I can, you know, like if I got a couple extra dollars, and the difference between the 99 cent toothpaste I grew up with and used to get, or I can get the $3.99, $4.99 toothpaste, and it might even come in a smaller tube, and it might be, but it's got super whitening power or
fluoride,
whatever the fuck. Like, it just, you know, it tastes a little bit better. Like, I used to get the baking soda toothpaste when I was younger, and especially when I was broke. Like, I'd just be like, baking soda toothpaste costs 79 cents,
right?
You know, but it's like niggas been probably putting baking soda toothpaste in their mouth since like 1905.
They have.
I'm like, you know what, let me step it up, you know, try something different. Now, you know, you come out and your pearly whites feel a little bit whiter, and that's nothing wrong with that, you know?
No, it's not at all. I think that, as far as, with the, toothbrush, I didn't like that kind, but what I did go, I bought one, and like I say, it was a little bit more expensive because I was trying to debate on which one I wanted. I have a fairly smaller mouth, so most adult toothbrushes don't get around my back teeth, and so, it's hard to get around the back molars.
Mm-hmm.
So I was debating about getting a children one or an adult one. I got an adult one with a smaller head, and the toothbrush itself was $16, but it came with your batteries were included, like everything was included.
Mm-hmm.
And then all the replacement heads, you know, you get the placement heads in like a pack of four, and I can buy them from the grocery store.
Right.
You know, cause sometimes when people buy certain toothbrushes, certain, you know, tops or heads aren't in the grocery store. So you have to kind of wait till they get to the grocery store. So I was like, well, this isn't too bad. So I didn't get one with the spinning. I just got like a regular flat one, and I really, really, I really like it. I can tell, that it actually gets my teeth clean. My mouth actually tastes better afterwards. I don't know if that feels, mm-hmm, sounds funny, but my mouth actually tastes better, feels better. And I really like to upgrade in toothbrushes. Now this kind is almost like Roger got like the super extreme vibrator. I went down a little bit. I was like, you know what, fuck that, let me get the rabbit and call it a day.
Now, I need that movement on mine, right? You know, I got like the Hitachi toothbrush, y'all.
Right. I'm like, you know what, I'll do the rabbit on the lower set and I'm good with that. We all satisfied.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because at the end of the day, that's all that matters. So I like that. And not to get off topic, when you're talking about taking care of yourself, when you say little things, it is little things. I realize it's little things, like not only upgrading toothbrushes, your toothbrush and toothpaste, but even simple things. I haven't done it in a while, but especially with me trying to get more physically active, starting to get more pedicures and manicures at least once every 3 months, starting to get massages at least once every 3 months. And what I realized, when you get older, shit that you used to look at and be like, why old people do that bullshit, now you're like, that sounds interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, and so it's one of those things where as you get older, you've got to take care and treat your body right. You don't recover as quick, you don't bounce back as quick, you know, take care of your feet, take care of your hands, because you need these tools. You know, people don't think of your hands as tools.
The other day we were playing ball, Justin hurt his arm, and I just I was like, when we were younger, a few years back or whatever, I would have been like, take a few days off, see how it feels, you know, if it's good, you just wait till it heals and then whatever, you know. But you know, when you now it's like almost 40, it's like, hey man, you should probably go to the doctor, just get it looked at. What's the worst thing that could happen? They're probably gonna tell you the same thing anyway, which is to take a few weeks off, but at least you'll know that it's not like a torn muscle or it's not something that requires surgery, you know, things like that. I was talking to my friend Ray yesterday. He was talking about playing basketball and how his elbow's been messed up for like a while, and he took a bunch of time off and it's still hurting. I was like, yeah, you should go to the doctor, you know. I just think little stuff like that, just people don't think about as much anymore. What was your go ahead.
No, and also it's one of those things too where somebody said in the chat room, a lot of times, because I in my personal opinion, I think just being young and naive, and because a lot of times the way our medical system is set up, a lot of people, the last thing a lot of people want to actually do is go to the doctor.
I mean, it's expensive, right. I mean, it's about to get more expensive,
right, which is very irritating, because it should be something where you shouldn't think twice about going, because it's about your health and wellness.
Yeah, it's a for-profit industry, you know. I think that bothers if in our country, that deters a lot of people from using it to a certain extent. And it's a luxury for a lot of people, you know, having good insurance, having the time, things of that nature. But yeah, I mean, you know, it is important to take care of yourself. What was the other thing you had?
Oh, the other thing, and in conjunction with this, it's about being old. Yeah, dog, you was in here with the pregame, Lord, pre-prepping. And I was on a chair, and I was sitting on the edge of the chair, and I got up, and my hip was like, nah, dog. I had to sit down. It actually took me like 2 to 3 times to get up. And then when I got up, I felt my hip actually move back in place, like, okay, we good to go now.
I never had that happen to me.
That's old. Now, knees is a whole nother thing. Like, I've always had problems with my knees because I have arthritis in my knees. But, yeah, my hip was like, nah, dog. And sometimes when I move around, I hear him popping.
Yeah. Yeah, doctor about that. I don't know what's going on with your hip.
old.
You're too young to be having hip problems, man. You got to check on that.
Okay.
Like, that's not supposed to happen to you, an old person having sex. And then you got to pretend that you fall down the stairs and then call your grandkids over, like, you really just fell down the stairs, but everybody know you was getting freaky, so.
Right, my hit was like, nah, dog.
All right, we got all kinds of news to get into. I don't even really know where to start. I guess we can start with, you know what, let's start with the hard news, which is LGBT news, because it's going to be pretty intense today, I think. Do you wanna funk with me? All right, let's get into it, because like I said, it's all kinds of shit going on today. I guess to start with probably the most heartbreaking news, and we'll see what happens in sentencing, but three men have been charged with the hate crimes in the shooting of a transgender woman, Deniquia Dodds. Washington DC grand jury indicted three men, Jelante Little, Monte T. Williams, and Saheem Hall, in a connection with the killing of 22-year-old Deniquia Dodds, a black transgender woman, the Washington Post reported. Dodds was shot during a robbery on July 4th and died 9 days later in the hospital. Little, Johnson, and Hall were charged in a robbery conspiracy and for first-degree felony murder that prosecutors in the indictment say was motivated by Dodds' gender identity. According to the Post, the men were also being charged with four other robberies that day, including robbery of another transgender woman. With the hate crime added to their charges, a judge could increase the sentences of the men if convicted, the Post reported, meaning a maximum 60-year sentence for the first-degree murder. Armed would move to a 90-year maximum sentence. Local transgender advocate Erlene Budd praised the indictment to the Post. It sends a message that it's not okay to go around and shoot, harm, and kill transgender people, Budd said. It sends a message that we are human like anyone else. And the thing is, like, they were on this spree, and this was not the only transgender woman they robbed. So,
and they purposely do this because they know, like, who are you gonna call? And if you do call somebody, they're not gonna take you seriously. They do mm-hmm. this to transgender people. A lot of transgender people, not all, but a large percentage, end up working in the sex industry. And so a lot of times they have a tendency to target them and people in the sex industry because they know nobody takes your plight seriously.
Yeah, people that don't, people, you know, police show up and assume you were a sex worker.
Even if you're not.
Even if you're not, people don't take it very seriously. People don't try to help you pursue justice. So, I mean, there's a lot of pitfalls to just even calling the police, you know, not to mention, will they then suspect something of you? You know what I mean? Which is, something that, you know, black people already think about before we call the police in the first place. But yeah, to be black and transgender, and a woman, like, you have to deal with all of that at the same time, you know? Speaking of transgender issues, Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie, who most people know probably from her, We Should All Be Feminist speech. It was quoted on, Beyonce's Flawless, I believe. Mm-hmm. And she became a lot of people's fave, you know, because of that. She kind of got herself in some hot water this weekend. She was being interviewed, and it was with British news station Channel 4, and she was asked about transgender women, and to give her opinion on that. She was like, she was asked, does it matter how you arrived at being a woman? I mean, for example, if you're a trans woman who grew up identifying as a man, who grew up enjoying the privileges of being a man, does that take away from becoming a woman? Are you any less of a real woman? And her response was, so when people talk about, you know, are trans women women, my feeling is trans women are trans women. I think the whole problem of gender in this world is about our experience. It's not about how we wear our hair or whether we have a vagina or a penis. It's about the way the world treats us. And I think if you lived in the world as a man with the privileges the world accords to men and then sort of changed, switched gender, it's difficult for me to accept that then we can equate your experience with the experience of a woman who has lived from the beginning in this world, in the world as a woman, and who has not been accorded those privileges that men are. And so I think there has to be, and this is not, of course, to say I'm saying this with a certainty that transgender should be allowed to be, but I don't think it's a good thing to conflate everything into one. I don't think it's a good thing to talk about women's issues being exactly the same as the issues of trans women, because I don't think that's true. So a lot of people were upset with her. And it was weird because when you have like the culture of like celebrity and stuff, and some people even found feminism through her, some people even like she's their hero. There's a lot of people that are very protective of her. And I think, it's weird because in a lot of cases feminism is such a critique of people constantly, and it's a critique of society constantly. So when people kind of start pulling their punches for certain people, it's always going to draw a red flag to me, you know. So I guess I'll start with you first. What did you think about our comments?
I don't agree with everything she said, but some parts I do agree with.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with the fact that there are issues that face transgender women,
mm-hmm.
that women who were born as a woman don't have to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you have to deal with sexism and racism and things like that, but I'm a woman. So right. I didn't go through the transition part, if that makes right. sense. So I don't know what that part of your life is like.
Mm.
So there is a difference in my opinion.
Well, it's weird because, I listen, put it this way. It's weird that you would ask somebody that's cisgender to speak about the authenticity of transgender womanhood. That is weird to me. You know what I mean? I don't find it any different than, when, you know, it would be like if someone asked me about what's it like to be a black woman. And you know what I mean? I can empathize. I can sympathize. I don't know. You know what I mean? And I have no qualifications in order to say what is a good and bad black woman. I have no, you know what I mean? Like, I can have my theories and my ideas, but it's not my lived experience, right? And to top it off, there are black women. So you can ask a black woman and they will probably tell you better than me, right? I think it's weird that there's so many outspoken transgender people, and yet we somehow keep asking the people that are cisgender that don't know the experience
right.
to speak on the behalf of how they feel about it, right?
Right.
So already you got a kind of a weird framing of the question, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then in the question, it's a loaded question because it says, if you're a trans woman who grew up identifying as a man, who grew up enjoying the privileges of being a man, does that take away from becoming a woman, and are you less of a real woman? So the question is loaded, right? Not people that are transgender, for the most part, when they describe their experiences, they don't describe them as, well, I grew up as a boy and then one day I changed and switched
right.
to a woman.
Right.
They will tell you from the day that I can conceptualize what gender was, I felt that I was this and I was in the quote unquote wrong body. And so I think to us outside with our own privilege that have cisgender, you know, like that we right. society doesn't really pressure us on like, what are you with our gender and shit. For us, we just look at the outside presentation. So it's like, right. oh, at 17 or 13 or 15 or 25 or 90, you switched genders. As far as we know, you started, getting surgery and hormone stuff and whatnot. And that's when people start on the outside being like, oh, this person is transitioning to something else. But if, like I said, if you listen to, and I think even the word trans is kind of a approximation, like, because we don't really have the right words for a lot of, like, you feel like you were born a woman, you feel like you were born a man, our society doesn't really handle that well. When you're born, you got to put something on a birth certificate and you don't get to pick that. Someone has to name you. Someone puts what clothes on you. Someone, society kind of, maybe for expedient sake or whatever the fuck, you know, maybe people just don't have time to change the whole world, but we kind of like filter people into one or the other just because that's how we're conditioned. So I think to hear people that are outside of this quote unquote box, people want to put them back in this box. Like, so we want to have a neat timeline of like, and at 17, you transitioned to a woman. So you were a man before that, or vice versa. Because trans men get left out of this conversation every time.
Yes, they do.
Like, it's like,
they don't exist.
Right. Like, if someone is a trans man, there's no way that people are going to be like, well, you existed as a woman for all this time, so you have a lot of authority to tell women what to do because before you trans, like, people just leave them out of the conversation. Like, that's not even a thing. But yeah, so you have, I'm just going by the words of the people who lived the experience. I find it odd that people are so, I shouldn't say odd, it's kind of predictable that people want to protect the people that are their favorites. And I also think it's predictable that people like call themselves allies. They say they support transgender people, but then they talk right over them. You know, like, there's a lot of outlets for people to be educated or to just at least elevate and hear transgender people in their own words. Like I listen to Black Girl Dangerous podcast. You know, you follow people on Twitter. And hear and get the words from their mouths, because what I saw was that a lot of transgender people were speaking for themselves and saying, this is my problem. And I saw a lot of cisgender people, black women too, like literally being like, fuck what you're saying, this is how I view it, and that's the only way to view it,
right?
Like, there's no, your experience doesn't matter to me. I don't really see how much different that is from when white women speak for they think they're speaking for all the feminists and shit. I don't see how it's that much different when you have the people, like, it wasn't about cisgender people having this woke off where they were arguing with each other. It literally was people, transgender people, they were putting their thoughts right on the timelines, right out there on social media. They were writing it down. They were sharing things. They were talking about this idea that there was male privilege inherent in being a transgender woman. And they were explaining, like, this is why this is not true. And people were just being like, fuck that shit. Like, I don't have to listen to that. Chimamanda is my fave. And also, I agree with her. And she didn't say this and she didn't say that. While, I mean, the words are right here. And people were explaining, like, I wish she would have said, she should have said, you can, a woman, trans women are women, not trans women are this other category. But we are women as well, you know,
right.
Doesn't mean you're not disrespecting it's not disrespecting someone's experience to say in this category of women, there is just so many other experiences. And this is just one that I'm not familiar with or I don't have, but it doesn't make it any less valid of an experience. You know, Laverne Cox went into this like Twitter thing where she was talking about like how she grew up. And, you know, she was like, I asked my brother, did I have male privilege growing up as a kid? Like, how do you think people saw me? You know, and she was saying how like that it didn't exist in the way that this promotes. You know, I think also, and I'm sorry to keep going, but I think also this shit is like, the examples that people have seen promoted before them are like Caitlyn Jenner.
Mm-hmm.
And, that is the like probably least typical example.
Come on.
Of trans, what it would be like to be transgender. But yet that is kind of the go-to spokesperson in a lot of people's minds. So they really do think it's a bunch of people that are like, I just decided at some point that I was going to just change and I was going to speak for everybody and I'm going to still keep my views that, you know, if you put a blank sheet of paper, didn't put a picture up and just put down the views of Caitlyn Jenner on a sheet of paper, most people would say, oh, that is a rich white Republican male without putting up a picture. You just, if I was just like, oh, this person's against this and this, you'd be like, oh, well, yeah, that's, you know, so there's people that are like, well, that's just what transgender is. Just this one day you decide and one day you just change, but nothing else really changed. But it's like, we have so much evidence to the contrary that that's not what life is for transgender people. So, I think it's kind of interesting to see people line up to battle over it when I think, you know, what I did, I just retweeted the people that were actually trans that were talking about this to be like, this is how they feel. So how the fuck can we just be like, nah, fuck you, you wrong. Like, nah, that's not right. You don't know what you're talking about. You know, it just felt weird, you know, and at the same time, I didn't want to argue with any black women about how they felt really, because that's their experience as women. Like, as a man, I don't want to come in and be like, you wrong. You can't say that because da 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 da. But I just know on the power structure of how things go, the person that lives an experience is typically the expert on that experience. And why would I go to someone else to get how they feel about the shit? It just doesn't make sense to me. I'm sorry, go ahead.
You finished?
Yeah.
I just didn't want to interrupt your train of thought. As far as me, transgender women are women. And within the group of womanhood, it's already divided. Like, you have black women, white women, Asian women, you know, African women, Jamaican women, like, you name it. Within the group of womanhood already, women have different experiences depending on their culture, their background, how they're raised, all this shit. Before you even, not trying to get to transgender women, there's already so many differences among this group. Transgender women is just another difference in this collection of women that already have these different experiences. And so once you identify as a woman, you are a woman.
Right.
I'm not questioning that whatsoever. I don't know what it's like to be a white woman, just like a white woman don't know what it's like to be me. That's why I said there is a difference within the group, because I, all my life, I've been a female-bodied woman. Right. I didn't have to deal with the thought or deal with the transition of thinking I was a man. So I do not know that experience. I have not lived that experience. I cannot tell them about that experience. But what I can't tell them is that they're not a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where I disagree. You know, like she said, it'd have been easy for her just to say that. But a lot of people fail to realize you can be in a minority group and still have privilege. And so right. many people miss that point. Right. A lot of people are so concerned about their own oppression that they forget that there are other people that are oppressed too, that do not fit the quote unquote stereotype that you're talking about. So many people miss that transition to me.
Right.
Because you have black women who are also homophobic, transphobic, misogynistic.
Right.
They're all this too, but they're women now. They're women just like these right. transgender women. Of course. But they have these issues within the group. So when something comes out that's not what they think it is, they come out in droves. When, like, black men, it's real easy for you to see race, it's real easy for you to see gender when it comes to black women, but if it strikes anybody outside of the group, you have a blind spot to that. And a lot of people do not want to admit that I can grow, I can change, I have areas in my life too. Everybody focuses on themselves being so oppressed that they do not look at other oppressed groups. You have a privilege. You are a black woman. One, you're a black woman in America,
mm-hmm.
which a lot of people fail to realize. Being an American is a privilege itself.
Well, Chimamanda isn't, but yeah, a lot of people that I saw defending her were, like, a lot of the people that were defending her were very much, like, just black women that, you know, I mean, some black women I respect, man, were just on some, like, man, fuck everybody saying anything different. Oh, that's what y'all mad about and shit like that. Like, that defiant ass, you know, the way, honestly, the way white people get mad when you question their privilege and shit, they were reacting just like that with right. the, like, I don't need to destruct the logic of these, the points that people are making. I'm just gonna be so offended that this is even a topic that there can be no discussion. And I don't even know how you can do that and then at the same time be like, trans lives matter, or let's, you know, support trans women and support trans people of color and support trans men. I don't know how you can say that while simultaneously just talking over their very real fucking words. Like, they are speaking out of their mouths and you're going, blah, y'all just trying to be too woke. Like, what?
It's not that. It's deeper than that. It, like I said before, it all boils down to nobody wants to see their own privilege. That's what it right. boils down to. Nobody wants to see themselves as a minority group as privileged. Black women in this country are a minority within the group and within the race. Within the group, I'm talking about black men and black mm-hmm. women and within the race. But you also have a privilege because you were not, you didn't have to go through the process of transitioning. You didn't have any struggles with that. So you have a privilege. The people that are transgender, they have a harder time. Mm-hmm. And there are black transgender people. People act like right. all transgenders are white people. I'll just say, because that's kind of how it's presented to an average person. Transgender people, oh, that's white folks. Mm-hmm. gays and lesbians, oh, that's white folks. Even though that's not true, a lot of times people don't want to admit, a lot of people get, and the reason why I say that's how it's presented to most people, because most of the time when anybody, you see it in most movies, that's why Moonlight was something different. Most movies, they're white. How they're presented in the commercials, they're white most of the time. It's rare that you get people that fall in these quote unquote other sexual categories being anything other than white, even though that's not true. Mm-hmm. So a lot of black people have even bought into, oh, well, I'm just assuming that they're all white, even though that's not true. And a lot of that comes into this factor also. And the thing is, everybody can grow. Even she can grow. You know, the thing is, if she wanted to answer this question right, she said, I have no experience in that. All women are women. You need to go present this question to a transgendered woman. And that would have been the end of it.
Right.
But it's one of these things where when you're dealing with people that quote unquote are supposed to be experts in this field, people a lot of times present them with these, like you said, these loaded questions a lot of times to catch them off, or, you know, because I'm pretty sure she wasn't prepared for that question. Now, if you'd ask a question about a black woman.
Well, she doubled down on it afterwards. So I don't even feel like it was a lack of preparation. She believes that. Like, to her, that is the prepared answer. I don't want to, like, that's the thing. A lot of people kind of took her agency out of it on some, like, sometimes people misspeak, or maybe she meant this or what. No, she said what she meant. You know what I mean? When she clarified later, and it wasn't a retraction, it wasn't an apology, it wasn't a, you know, I've listened to my transgender sisters and I understand how they feel, and I take back what I said, and trans women are women, and just, you know, it's just a different experience of womanhood. No, that is not what she did. So I don't even know that it's about growing necessarily. I mean, to a certain extent, you would hope that people grow. I mean, obviously that's the optimistic view, but somebody like her, like, this is how she make a living. Like, these are her thoughts. This is her researched opinion. It's not a coincidence or accident, you know? So I don't have any evidence of giving somebody the benefit of the doubt in their growth until they show some. So, you know, it's kind of like, how we feel about Emma Watson talking bad about Beyonce and shit. Like, until Emma Watson says something, I'm not gonna say it for her. Like, you have the words, you're an intelligent person, you know how to speak. I have to take you on face value that this is what we just disagree, and I think you're wrong, and you probably think I'm wrong, and that's that to me. That, like, this type of wrong is fucked up, because it's the wrong that basically harbors on someone's humanity and someone's experience. I just don't, you know, like, and I understand to a lot of people that they hero and shit. So it's on, like, one thing yesterday just seemed to be a day for me of not really being able to engage with people, because everybody was kind of on a hero worship. And I don't mean with this, it was a lot of shit, from Iron Fist and how people feel about Marvel, mm-hmm. to the situation, to, like, all kinds of shit, where it's just people have their heroes and it just taints their point of view. Like, they're incapable of being unbiased. If these same words had come out of, like, Dr. Umar's mouth or some shit, people would be like, oh, he denying people being trans women. Trans women ain't women now. Like, people would have been on. But if it comes out of the mouth of somebody you look up to, they let it slide. You know, Bell Hooks says the same shit about trans women, and people, but she dissed Beyonce, so people go in on Bell Hooks, like, more often than not now when it comes to this topic. But I don't know, people just didn't want to go in on this, which is, I mean, obviously they're right, but I think it's telling, you know, especially when, like I said, I don't have a problem with, if people of privilege have these discussions where they just don't know what the fuck they're talking about sometimes, or they, you know, they're, because I don't often know everything. Right. I don't know everything. I don't know. You know what I mean? So I didn't have a hot take. I didn't have anything to say that was calling people out or taking people to task. I don't feel that is necessarily my place to go into, you know, to tell some black woman that how she's supposed to feel. But what I did do is elevate the voices of the people that actually have this experience, because why the fuck would anyone's opinion be more important in that. I just don't understand how we can see that with white shit but not with each other. You know, it's disappointing, to be honest. Like, we can, when it's some white people shit, we 100% be like, that white woman cannot talk about what black people experience.
Right.
Shut the fuck up. No matter what theory you have, what class you have, how many friends you have, you can't speak for the experience. But yet they get asked about it, half the problem is you shouldn't even get asked about it.
Right.
Like, they have no, there should be no reason that we should be asking Amy Schumer what it's like to be a black woman. It's just no, that should never come up. But when it does come up and they tank the question, people don't have all this understanding and maybe she can grow. White people do, but we don't have that. Like, black people are like, she don't know what the fuck she talking about. It's not her experience. It's not her place to say. Pass the buck to somebody that does and leave it at that, right? So there's been a, like, go ahead.
Yeah, but they don't want to do that when it's the other way around, when mm-hmm. you as a black person is speaking on something particular to another minority group that you don't know jack shit about. It's okay. Yeah. It's okay for you to say, I don't know, take this question to someone else. And also, I mean, you talked about it, and this is something I've been debating about for a long time. I am almost to the point where I don't believe in allyship no more. I am almost to that point.
Yeah,
where
I definitely don't believe in it.
Like the word is used, and I go, okay, ally, ally, ally. But I'm to the point now to where, no, I don't believe in allyship. Just be a better person. Just be a better person. Because the thing about allyship is that I learned is that a lot of times the privileged person does something right and they think they get a gold fucking sticker for life, and it don't work like that. It's a transition. You have to continually grow. You have to continually evolve. The thing about allyship is a verb and not a noun. Right. So it's hard for people to understand is the action behind it. It's not just, I just did something for the day. I just put on a safety pin. I just wore a t-shirt. I put out a pink ribbon. You know, I held up a rainbow colored flag. It's more to that. And the thing is, when it comes to allyship, people that are allies don't look at it as a lifestyle change. And it's actually, they have to change their lifestyle where they have understanding, empathy, sympathy, where they look beyond themselves, where they realize that the world doesn't revolve around them, where they challenge their friends, where they challenge their family, where they're willing to lose friends, where they're willing to lose family on the behalf of somebody else that they don't have to. Because the thing about people that are a marginalized group, people that are not affected by this whatsoever have to speak up. That's how shit changes. It's no other way around it. Black people can talk to their blue in the face, but a lot of times it takes white people being concerned, white people coming on board, because they're not affected by this shit whatsoever. Them saying, oh, we're not going to take it, too, because we understand shit changes. And that also goes with transgender. It's gonna take a lot of straight, regular ass people that these laws don't affect them whatsoever for them to come out and be like, no, what you're not gonna do is affect these people, because you know what? We're all the same. We're all equal. But until you get to that point, like, I really am to the point where I do not believe in the word ally. Don't be my ally. Be a fucking better human being.
Well, also, all right, two things. One is, it's kind of interesting because, the ally thing also implies like almost like a charitable thing. Like, I don't actually believe in our equality, but I'm gonna help you out. You know what I mean? Like, where I do feel like, even being a person that's empathic and helping people out is a reciprocal relationship. Like, I don't mind that it's a selfish thing, because it bettering the world is also bettering yourself.
Right.
So you should become a better person as you do these things. Like you should become a better person as you learn more, listen more, all this shit. Like, I don't mind that part. The part that's so weird to me is, I just don't believe in it because I don't think people truly feel that they are, ally with folks. You know, look, how many people say stuff like, I'm a trans ally, and then call Caitlyn Jenner Bruce Jenner?
Come on.
You know what I mean? But then but if you ask them, they will tell you, I don't have a bigoted bone in my body. Hey, if that's so I can't call him and shit like that. Like, okay, so the buck stops someplace. So essentially you're tolerating
right
you're tolerating somebody. So that's like one of the main things. Two, people are gonna mess up. So I understand, but part of like the messing up is you gotta hear that you messed up, you have to think about how you messed up, and you have to like really see if you can change how you messed up. And I think people are so scared of that part too, because everyone's so dismissive. Everyone is very much like one fuck up and you out of here. You know, and sometimes for self-protection, but also there is an element of it on social media and shit that is about like dragging people or bullying people or like trying to be cooler than somebody, or people get personal investment so they don't really give a fuck about the point that people are making. They just can't wait to sit around and be like, I never liked this motherfucker anyway. Like there's all these elements to it as well, but I just think in general it's hard to believe anybody can be an ally to anyone when, you know, the second that you don't agree, they just talk right over you.
Right.
And essentially that's what happened. I just watched a lot of people talk right over trans women of color. Like, not to be a jerk, but I mean, no one should really give a fuck about my opinion, and nobody should give a fuck about cisgender people's opinion on this shit at all.
Right.
Nobody should care. It should just be what the people who are experiencing this believe. That's
right.
It.
Right.
You know, like that, like I don't understand how we can see that with every other issue but this issue. I was flabbergasted, man. I was kind of like taken aback by just some of the people that weren't just the fact that they were like, I don't understand or I don't get it or whatever. There were so many people that were like adamantly like, fuck everybody that don't agree with her. Y'all just trying to do this, that, and the other. And I'm like, well, are you, so then I guess fuck the transgender women that are saying that they like, cause you say that you support them and shit, but fuck them at the same time. Like, I don't understand, you know, cause that is exactly what white folks do to us. That is exactly what white folks do to us. When we say some shit, they're like, fuck what you got to say. And I'm not racist, so don't you dare try to accuse me. You know, it's like, wow, you getting awfully upset at just the idea that you might be wrong here. You know, and you're shouting me down. So I don't know. I don't know if you can really, I don't know. It was a weird day, man. And so anyway, the hashtag Male Privilege Diary started on Twitter. And there's been people using the hashtag that are trans people giving their experiences as children, being like, okay, so my male privilege, me getting kicked out the house at 15. Because they were because I was questioning my gender, that's male privilege. Childhood trauma from being coerced into boys' gym and locker room spaces and still don't go to the gym, male privilege diaries. Being seen as a failure to be a woman or a man, but also not being allowed to be neither, constantly failing at a gender. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just a bunch of people saying that, you know, like, this is my experience as a child, and then a bunch of people just dismissing them, you know what I mean? Like, you know, like I said, Laverne Cox talked about it. I was talking to my twin brother today about whether he believes I had male privilege growing up. I was a very feminine child, though I was assigned male at birth. My gender was constantly policed. I was told I acted like a girl. I was bullied and shamed for that. My femininity did not make me feel privileged. I was a good student. I was very much encouraged because of that. But I saw cis girls who showed academic promise being nurtured in the Black community. I grew up in Mobile, Alabama. Gender exists on the spectrum, and the binary narrative, which suggests that all trans women transition from male privilege, erases a lot of experiences and isn't intersectional.
Right.
Gender is constituted differently based on the culture we live in. There's no universal experience of gender or of womanhood. To suggest that is essentialist and, again, not intersectional. Many of our feminist foremothers cautioned against such essentialism and not having an intersectional approach to feminism. Class, race, sexuality, ability, immigration status, education all influence the ways in which we experience privilege. So though I was assigned male at birth, I could contend that I did not enjoy male privilege prior to my transition. Patriarchy and cis sexism punished my femininity and gender nonconformity. The irony of my life is prior to transition, I was called a girl, and after, I am often called a man. Gender policing and the fact that gender binaries can only exist through strict policing complicates the concept gender privilege, and that's okay because it's complicated. Intersectionality complicates both male and cis privilege. This is why it is paramount that we continue to lift up diverse trans voices. For too many years, there have been far too few trans stories in the media. For over 60 years since Christine Jorgensen stepped off the plane from Europe and became the first internationally known trans woman, the narrative about trans folks in the media was one of macho guy becomes a woman. That's certainly not my story or the story of many trans folks I know. That narrative often works to reinforce binaries rather than explode them. That explosion is the gender revolution. I imagine one of the gender self-determination, of true gender self-determination.
And I agree. And also it's one of the things too, to where, you know, when it comes to feminism, how a lot of black women are gung-ho and very hard, have a very hard stance on white feminism. Mm-hmm. And they're like, nah, fuck them bitches.
Right.
Well, within the black feminist group, there are trans people who come up and say, hey, I'm black and I'm trans and these things matter to me. And we do the same shit them white women do. So they turn around, they break off, and they be like, you know, hey, we're going to be trans feminists, or we're going to talk about trans issues being black.
Right.
And then black women want to get mad and offended and act like, well, you black too. Yeah, I'm black, but when I bring up my issues, you don't ever want to talk about my issues. The same thing we tell them white women. So mm-hmm. It's one of those things where it's not true equality until we look at all people as the same.
Also, like, I mean, it's always complicated for people because when you can be on the side of the, like, the privilege spectrum moves to where now you're on the side of the people that can be oppressive, everybody freezes up.
You
know, that's why sometimes when we talk about shit, I don't even say necessarily race or not. I'll just say privileged people because it really is almost like watching the same play over and over and over, but just involving different, you know, different things. Like, you know, if we're talking about gender identity, yeah, so being cis, being somebody that has never had my shit questioned, I've never, like, at no point has somebody demeaned me or thought I was a woman or tried to belittle me or somehow or attacked me or any of this shit, you know, in my mind growing up, I never thought of that as any level of privilege. I thought that was pretty much everybody, you know, like, even a gay person, often you're like, well, that person is gay, but that doesn't make them, like, it's not that they're not a man, they're gay. It's not that they're not a woman, they're gay. So you introduce to a lot of people a new concept, whether we've been living with it our lives, our whole lives or not.
Right.
To them, it's new. People are now in an age where they can speak for themselves, so we don't need intermediaries. We don't need a book necessarily. Just, you can go on Twitter and people are like, I'm trans, this is how I feel about this thing.
Right.
And sometimes you end up being the bad guy.
Yes, you do.
You know, as a black man, there's plenty of people I follow where sometimes I'm in the group as the bad guys. And, you know, you have to self-examine. You have to think about that shit. I try to spread the word for them, elevate their own words, not try to speak for them. But,
right.
Like, that, but that is a, that's a hard thing for, I've noticed, for a lot of people to deal with. Mm-hmm. There are black men that just flatly reject black women who speak out against anything that a black man do.
Right.
You know, that's why the word black feminist is so charged and angry mm-hmm. when black men speak about it, for the most part, because
it's cold for you bitches, shut up. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we could be the person you're talking about, and often we are.
Mm-hmm.
And since we fall into that, you know, that group, we want to shut it down. We don't want to hear you talk about, like, your issues and shit like that. No. You're a bitch now. You know what I mean? How am I part of the problem? You know, all I do is call women bitches and hoes and say, would you let your girl wear this? And, say that, you know, a bunch of fucking really, fucked up shit about women. But the second you start talking about I'm part of the problem, I'm like, see, this is what's wrong with black feminists. You know, it's that kind of thing. And I think that goes for all kinds of people and all kinds of groups. And I just think people have a long way to go. And everybody has a long way to go with just even the concepts let alone the real experience, lived experience of transgender people. Yeah, Raquel Willis, who I followed Twitter, she had like a tweet storm too. Chimamanda being asked about trans women is like Lena Dunham being asked about black women. Right. It doesn't work. We can speak for ourselves. Mm-hmm. She needs to take a lesson from herself on the danger of a single story, because she's just shown how dangerous cisgender hegemony is. We know exactly what you mean when you say trans women are trans women, but can't simply say trans women are women. Cis women don't need to feel threatened by trans womanhood. If your experience means less because trans women exist, that's your problem. When you ostracize and devalue trans women and their womanhood, you are operating as a tool of the patriarchy. Just like white women historically feel threatened by black women claiming womanhood on their terms, cis women feel that this towards trans women. Trans women aren't saying their experiences are just like cis women, just as queer women don't claim that they are just like straight women. The average woman is cis. That does not make her womanhood more valid.
Right.
All it says is that trans women are on the margins. Yes, folks raised as girls are plagued with oppression in a different way than people not raised as girls. No one denies that. However, cis girls and women in general experience the privilege of being seen, accepted, and respected in their gender from birth. That doesn't negate threats of violence, harassment, or oppression in the patriarchal society, things trans women of any age also face. Yeah, see, that's the part that I think, and maybe that's because of the Caitlyn Jenner shit, that's the part I think always gets skipped over, is that there's this idea that, like, well, trans women, when they're children, obviously everybody respects and treats them just like we respect and treat boys, right? You're playing sports and everyone loves and agrees with you. And it's like, haven't we all grown up with the kid where you're like, people treat that kid differently because they present differently?
Right.
We've all grown up with that kid. You know, just look at how like a celebrity will have their son wear a dress or something, and it doesn't mean that kid's transgender, by the way, but just my son likes to wear a dress and I just have that, I'm just got an open household, you can wear whatever you want, I don't care. You look at the comments of that article and it's all like, get back in your motherfucking box, what's wrong with your kid, why you raising him that way, you gonna make him gay, shit like it's a lot of negativity associated with it, but yet somehow that also is supposed to be representative of the male experience and male privilege. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know that, or not even I don't know. I'm watching people who live that experience say it's not. You know what I mean? To say I was never treated like the boys, like this was not a thing for me. Not to mention, it's different for everybody. So even if it was a thing, you can't just be like, and that's why all these trans women aren't women, they're just trans women, quote unquote. This convo falls apart more and more with more and more trans folks coming out at younger ages. That's another thing that is happening in society that I think is for the better, is with more people coming out at younger ages and parents being more acceptive and open to it. Mm-hmm. It's gonna erase this idea of like, and you grew up with this type of privilege. I think it's gonna erase that idea of being like, what you at 17, you just suddenly decide. It's like, no, my whole life I was treated this way. So now how are you gonna try to take that away from me? Mm-hmm. So this convo falls apart with more and more trans folks coming out at younger ages. Also conveniently leaves out trans masculine folks. The violence that gender nonconforming and gender diverse kids face is real and always left out of this essentialist conversation. Do we tell a cis woman that she's less of a woman if she says she's never experienced harassment or violence or overt discrimination? No. A trans woman in Brazil was beaten to death in the streets because of her womanhood. 5 black trans women were similarly killed in February. Trans women have been hypersexualized in the media, exploited for our bodies, paid less, denied health care, and told our voices are invalid. And if you want to play oppression Olympics, sorry cis women, you're going to lose more often than not, which is why this convo isn't productive. It's nonsensical and privileged to require trans women to experience certain instances of oppression to prove their womanhood. If that were the case, many of your rich cishet white faves wouldn't be quote unquote real women either. We don't need public debates on trans women. We need trans women elevated to allowed to speak for themselves. And if you learn from something, cash me /$ Raquel Willis and support like you do your problematic cis faves. I
don't blame her.
Yeah, we donated to Black Girl Danger when they were doing like fundraising last year. Mm-hmm. But I'm about to put some on collection plate again right now. Real talk, man, I was thinking about this too. It sucks. Like, I do want to elevate the voices of people that live that experience. It just sucks that so much of their online time ends up having to be explaining to people why the fuck they have to deal with, or what they have to deal with, or what they go through, or how this should be viewed, and educating people. Like, that takes a toll on people.
Yes, where it does.
You're constantly educating people about your life, your human.
Right, and it's also one of the things, I know people quote-unquote phrase is white women tears, but Black people can have tears too, because you're coming out and talking about your experience, and all you see is people crying all around you out of their privilege.
Right. So, like I said, man, if I think before anybody responds to any of this shit, if your thing is just, this woman, Chimamanda is my fave, and I just have to defend everything she does,
don't waste your time.
Then don't write me. Mm-hmm. Don't write us. Mm-hmm. Like, I really legitimately do not care, because I'm not trying to stop her from being your fave. Like, I realized that yesterday, because remember I was telling you how yesterday I was just like, it was just a hard day to talk to people, and I just had to like stop talking to people, really, because people were talking past each other. But there was this woman who on the cooking network, a food network, food something. Mm-hmm. She has apparently she's like this super white woman that just like, you know, it's like that skit from Teen Titans where they don't put no salt on the potatoes or else.
Okay, like okay. I'm trying to think of which one.
Her husband apparently just hates all flavor, just hates it, right?
Okay, let me so what you talking about, go ahead.
They had matter of fact, we can transition out of LGBT news, because I think I have this article saved, and we can we'll get back, we'll do some more tomorrow. Let me see if I can find her, because I feel like I saved this article. But so she had this thing where she was talking about making Asian wings, right?
Okay.
Now, first of all, I feel like that's pretty ridiculous that you work for a Food Network and yet Asian wings is a thing, not teriyaki wings, not katsu fried chicken.
Come on, not what is that, chili Thai or whatever.
Right, Thai that, chili. Right,
yeah, whatever that is. Yeah, you do know they have flavors. The wings don't look at you with Asian eyes. Come on, baby.
Right. It felt real like,
last time I checked, I don't know, they might have different races of chicken, but last time I checked, when you fry them a barbecue and whatever, they come out one flavor chicken.
Yeah, so she kind of got roasted about the fact that, you know, the segment was filmed in 2012. She's playing a prank on her family where she's going to serve them Asian hot wings instead of buffalo style that they're expecting. And she basically pulls them out after making them, and her husband is like, where are the real wings? And another man says, I don't trust them. And she says, I'm just kidding, guys, I wouldn't do that to you. And then she brings out buffalo wings out the oven, and they're like, now those are some real wings. And the people I saw that first responded to this, because I don't watch the show, I don't really watch the Food Network, so I don't have a fave. But the first thing I noticed was the people that were really defensive about it, they watch our show and that's their fave.
Right.
The people that were really defensive about the Iron Fist shit, they watch all the Marvel shit and that's their fave. The Chimamanda thing, that's their people's fave. People are more scared that they're going to have to give something up than they are about whether it's right or wrong.
Right.
Cause I think, like, one of the reasons I don't really urge or talk about boycotting things, my mind just doesn't work that way, to be honest.
Yeah,
like, if I don't like something or something is so, I'm more like, if this isn't going to be fun, then I'm out.
Right. And this is that simple to me. If it's not going to be fun, I'm out. You went to watch Logan. I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm out. I'm tired of the Logan movies. No, they've been bad.
Right. Well, like, but like, I'm not like, I don't really, you know, we do this show. I don't really get offended by very many things, but I can be like, well, damn, I wanted to enjoy this thing. It doesn't seem like it's going to be as fun anymore. It seems like there's more agendas around it than there's going to be, like actual whether it was good or not. And now I don't want to be I watched this thing, I want to talk to people about it, and I end up talking about Nate Parker being a rapist, or I end up talking about whitewashing, or I end up talking about racism. Then I'm like, I don't really want to consume this anymore. And so I think that's what happens, because there were a lot of people like, I watch her show and she is kind of weird, but I don't know if we can call this racist as shit. And I mean, how do we know for a fact? Is this really?
Well, if she'd have called it the black big lip sugar jumper barbecue wings, y'all would have been fucking angry, because you go, well, why the wings got to be African-American or black? It's the same goddamn thing.
Some people were, one person was even like, well, if she would have called it Jamaican wings, then I could see how people would get mad. I was like, well, then the same thing would apply for whatever culture, quote unquote, of wings. By the way, I don't see why she couldn't just say teriyaki wings and had the same fucking skit. I mean, it's a corny skit. It's hokey. It's probably just for some Family Channel bullshit. But I don't see why you couldn't just say, like, teriyaki wings. They hate they love only one type of wing. I'm going to make teriyaki wings, and this would be funny. Now I don't know what happens to these wings. You throw them in the trash, you waste that food on TV. I don't know what's supposed to happen, but the other part of this, I was like, Asian people tired of being the butt of these jokes, man.
Yes, they are, and I don't blame them.
They just getting fed up, man. Like, it is what it is. Like
we matter too.
Yeah, if you're gonna make these jokes and shit, like, then you need to accept that there's gonna be some people unhappy about it. Like, that's pretty much every joke people make, is there's always one person or one group of people that might not like your joke. Then just accept that, rather than to be like, this isn't racist. Maybe if a bunch of people telling you this shit is racist, who am I to tell you it's not?
Right. And I've had to grow and evolve in that too in my life, because, you know, it's one of those things where privileged American, you know, growing up, you hear a lot of those jokes and you just think that shit's okay. But if you grew up in that culture, that shit is not okay. So I have evolved and grown around that a lot.
Yeah, people are fans of things, and because they're fans, then that supersedes everything else. Because you don't want to believe you're a fan of something where they could basically make a mistake. I'm not even going to call it problematic. They can make a mistake.
True, they can make a mistake.
Like, you don't want to be a fan. Like, it's so weird, because it's like, matter of fact, keep going. There was a, did you see the video of the BBC, the dude doing an interview with the BBC, and his children came in? And then the woman came in and scooped his children up. No? Mm-mm. All right, give me a second. I'll try to find it. But
I think I seen the gift, but I didn't see the woman come in. Like, so I didn't see the thing in its entirety.
Right.
Like, they gifted it, but they chopped it off.
All right. So this woman, first of all, I forgot to mention this. You said you didn't know if you knew this woman. The Food Network woman is Pioneer Woman.
I haven't heard of her. Refresh.
Refresh. Something going on. All right, give me a second. But yeah, she's called Pioneer Woman. She's on Food Network.
She must be one of the newer people. She might have been around for a while, but one of the people I haven't watched yet. I don't watch her.
And it's weird, because the people that were defending her were like, well, no, her thing is that she just makes really, her family only likes this really traditional, bland American food. And I'm like, why is she on TV? Like, y'all watch this?
Great ass cooks out there, and y'all got this bullshit right. You know, that's why I don't watch as much as I used to, because a lot of even with the Food Network and the Cooking Channel, all that stuff. That's not funny. But like this, I know you don't watch, but you have the Food Network, and then you have like a sister network or a smaller version called the Cooking Channel.
Mm-hmm.
That one is so much better, because it's people of color,
mm-hmm.
and so when you go to that one, you have people of color that are not your mainstream people, but they'll go on their background, they go on their culture, and it's various different people. Like, they're not all like brown, but even if they're presenting as white, that it's about their culture. And that one is so much better. A lot of times the recipes are better, they're more flavorful, they're a lot better on the Cooking Channel than they are Food Network. I wish some of the people on the Cooking Channel, actually, in my opinion, to be on Food Network. They're actually just much better.
Well, here's the thing I was going to mention, right? So, one, she has a show, and it's about cooking bland food, which it seems weird to me. Right. But it wouldn't be so bad to play the joke, quote unquote, of this is different, this is Asian culture food. Not that it still wouldn't be bad, but you know how it wouldn't be so bad if you had any Asian food shows on your network,
right? They
like if like if the Asian food show wasn't the like Master Chef, you know, if it was just actually like, here's an Asian person who makes different foods for their family, and then it's not a joke, it's not played as so exotic, it's just, this is just the Asian diet, this is just one person, and they can make whatever the fuck they want, but occasionally they might make something that we identify as Asian food, and it's more of an educational situation for a lot of people, and it normalizes this rather than the only time it's gonna show up on our network is as a joke. Yeah, people gonna get mad,
right? Like you say, it's normally Iron Chef, right? Top Chef. Like, to the best of my knowledge, there is no strictly, hi, I am an Asian person, or I am of Asian descent, from whatever culture, and here is my show. They're always presented, like you say, in these different forms, and they do have them, but like I said, they own this alternative, smaller, secondary channel.
Yeah, people just, like, Asian people just tired of that shit.
Come on. They tired of the chopstick jokes. They tired of the soy sauce jokes. They're like, hey, dog, it's more to us than these quote-unquote standardized American, a lot of times not funny fucking slapstick jokes.
Yeah. Let's see. I think we already talked about Emma Watson hitting back at the Beehive for labeling her a hypocrite by including the rest of her comments in her interview. I think we already talked about this, maybe. No? All right, well, anyway, she had an interview in Vanity Fair, the one where she said that she wasn't comfortable with Beyonce's video because the camera felt so male, and she later in the interview basically goes on to, she became more okay with it because it was for her, it was for Beyonce's husband, Jay-Z, so that okay, was okay.
Okay, yeah, I remember you mentioning something about it. I don't know how in depth we went, but I remember you mentioning something about it, and yeah, she basically just doubled down, and yeah, people will continue to call you out because it's this double standard.
Yeah, so she basically just, like I said, no apology or anything. Mm-hmm. Just included the whole interview and just left it at that. So, but people framed it like she hit back and proved that she wasn't, but it's like, well, you still did the thing that you said Beyonce did that you had a problem with. You excuse Beyonce because you said it's an album about her husband, so it's okay, but yet the problem you had was this idea of like presenting womanhood for male gaze. How do you define that for people? Like, you put your titties out, how do we decide who the fuck that's for? You know, we have no, like, we like to assume that it's for men and men only, to assume that that somehow belittles your points when it comes to talking about feminism and shit, to assume it belittles your work, that's pretty fucked up too.
And the thing is, and this is what kills me, male gaze is not a bad thing, and there are women that want that male gaze, and it is okay to want male gaze. It's okay to want to be objectified. I think some people, when it comes to this, I think some women are just completely against women being objectified, and just don't want to give women the agency and the choice to say, I want you to look at my ass. I want you to look at my titties. I don't have a problem with it. I am right here voluntarily. Nobody's putting a gun to my head. Nobody's forcing me. I think a lot of times, a lot of women, in my opinion, that are heavy against objectification, they don't want to be objectified in any way, shape, form, or fashion. So they want to push upon other people. But the point of feminism is the choice to say, hey, come look at these titties, but you better fucking respect me.
Yeah, I think our society is very puritanical like that anyway, where this idea that like Serena Williams can't be in Sports Illustrated and want equal pay for her tennis matches, you know, like
it devalues you, and that makes right. fucking sense in my mind,
right? Yeah, I think maybe, I don't know if we'll ever work towards it, but I think a lot of times people are chipping away at it by being like, yes, I'm an ambassador to the UN, and yeah, my titties are in the magazine. It, like, we just, there's not a problem, like, there, we don't have a problem with fucking Trudeau being like the prime minister or Barack Obama being the president, and there's also like a shirtless picture of Barack Obama at the beach that people are like, woo, like we don't have a problem with that, but it's like if that was a woman, right, we would have a problem with that for sure, as a society,
right? Because the over sexualization of women, when women, they just exist, but everything about you just has to be over analyzed and over sexualized,
right? All right, let's see what else we got here. No, I'm not doing the story yet. Hold on, let me see what else I got. Oh, all right, we'll do this one next. So there's a podcast that I'm gonna be honest, I never listened to, but it's been making the rounds the last like week or so because it's like a big controversy. But Citizen Radio had to oust one of their hosts, Jamie Kilstein, because he got caught making some pretty sexual advances and uncomfortable shit towards women, while apparently his brand is like, I'm super duper woke white male feminist dude that and his brand was also like sort of attacking people and comedians and shit and all kinds of people on Twitter and stuff. Is like, you're promoting rape culture, I'm gonna get you, and you a rapist, you like rape and shit like that. And for comedians in a lot of cases, they're like, you one of us, you supposed to, like, he's a comedian, but you're attacking everybody, and who are you doing this for, and why are you doing this and shit. And so basically through this podcast, he started it with, I guess, a woman he was dating, or they were married at some point, and then they got divorced like a year ago, and they've been still doing the show together. But he's been out there apparently trying to fuck women. Some of the allegations that got brought to light is like he was having affairs during his marriage with fans of the show. Then he would go on his show and talk about it and say, like, talk about his exploits of fucking women on the road and brag and shit like that, basically. So they kind of got him out of there because they felt like, he's being manipulative, he's emotionally abusive,
fuck with our money, because it's a very, very large show. Like, mm-hmm. I said, I've really actually sat down and like listened to it, but they kind of roll in those left political leaning like Young Turks circles, yeah. Right. And so they're on my radar, because sometimes you just want to be aware of people. But it's one of those things where, yeah, black people and minorities are left out of a lot of shit. Not unless they bring you up to use you for an example for something, but your actual issues, but go ahead.
Yeah, it's on the show they tried to like let the audience be aware, like, hey, this is what's going on, he's gonna be leaving the show, this is what he's accused of, and he wouldn't do any of that. So he wouldn't say what happened, he only say that this is the last show. He wouldn't let her say it in the Allison Kilkenny wouldn't let her say it on the show notes. Like, it was just a complete like, nope. Okay, I see we need to go to the next segment. Hold on a second, guys, bring it right back and we'll be right back in a second as soon as I get back online.
But look at it. I got beans, greens, potatoes, tomatoes, lamb, ribs, beans, greens, potatoes, tomatoes, chicken, turkeys, beans, greens, potatoes, tomatoes, lamb, ram, beans, greens, potatoes, tomatoes, chicken, turkeys, chicken, beans, greens, potatoes, tomatoes, lamb, ram, beans, greens, potatoes, tomatoes, chicken, turkeys, beans, greens, potatoes, tomatoes, beans, greens, potatoes, tomatoes, beans, greens, potatoes, greens,
all right, so So Allison Kilkenny then went on her Facebook page and wrote this note about Jamie's departure from Citizen Radio. Recently, some disturbing allegations have been brought to my attention, entailing several women who have accused Jamie of being manipulative, emotionally abusive, and predatory in his behavior. There have been murmurs of this in the past, but understandably, the women wish to remain anonymous, so I was never able to fully learn the scope of what happened until very recently, a couple days ago. I want to be careful what I say here. I don't want to reveal anyone's identity until they're ready to speak publicly, but one of the victims was someone who worked for the show. Now that I have a full story, I'm deeply upset and disturbed by what I've learned. This is why I've asked Jamie to leave the show. He agreed, and why he's agreed to seek therapy. I also wanted him to publicly post about what he's done and apologize, but he declined to do that. I also wanted to be very clear in the episode title and description why he was leaving the show, and he declined, so I'm posting here instead. Without making this about me, I want you all to know I'm furious, crushed, and horrified by all this. I always believed Citizen Radio was a genuinely safe space, and I'm trying to make it that way again. I'm so sorry for letting anyone down.
Yeah, because it's one of those things where they live in a space where his whole thing was just being hard and making enemies and turning people against him, but just, you know, nothing is funny. And so, you know, if you have that hard stance, you know, constantly talking about women's rights and women's issues and being that quote unquote ally, and you do this, yes, it is going to be a blow, because they're to the point where they make a living off of this. They're like, look, we got sponsors. Like, we can't have you here.
Right.
And you're causing these problems with our fans. We're losing listenerships. Like, no doubt, you got to go. And what speaks volumes, he don't think it's wrong. Because the thing is, if he did, he would put some form of explanation out there. He has no sympathy for the people that he's affected. He has no empathy for the people that he's affected. That, and is one of those things where if you don't want to do that, he thought he was right.
Yeah, he deleted his Twitter account, but, you know, as somebody that, and I'm sure he deleted his Twitter account in part because he was getting some of the same attacks that he had been putting towards people, and people were probably gloating and talking shit on him, and
he had been on people's radar, and you know, a lot of people, I don't do this, but a lot of people are about, oh, that's your fave, I can't wait till they fuck up. Yeah. But when they fuck up, here I go.
Right. And there's that, always that residual, like, you call yourself a feminist? Well, that's why you are actually a dangerous man, because only a dangerous man will call himself a feminist. You must be a rapist.
This is why I don't trust men, and this is why I don't think men should be allied. Like, you go through that whole thing.
So you got that part. Then you got just the people that just don't like him in general, because there's always the, I don't like, because there's two schools to the I don't like the male feminist shit, which is obviously the, you know, there's women that are like, I don't trust it, you know, you just a wolf in sheep's clothing. And then there's always the people that are like, I hate all feminists, period. So you being a man calling yourself a feminist, you playing for the wrong team, so I hate you doubly.
Right.
But then there's also, like I said, people that he's called rapist and shit on Twitter, and then they like come back to get some get back. You know, and this is a good time to be like, now who's the rapist? You rapist ass rapist. Now, he wasn't accused of raping anyone, but still, like, they don't care. You know what I mean? Like, he's pissed enough people off. He got dropped from his record label, Don Giovanni Records, cause he also had a punk band. So that shit got dropped.
Like, we can't sell no albums with bullshit.
Right. And he was a pretty big, I didn't know him like that, but he was a pretty big name.
He was really on
Conan.
Yes.
MSNBC.
And those
written for a bunch of websites, including Jezebel, whose article I'm reading right now. Mm-hmm. In 2013, he had a video on male privilege. He told men, listen to women, don't be a dick to women. In a podcast discussion about Amber Heard's domestic violence allegations against Johnny Depp, he remarked, be a good person and believe women. In the same episode, he told Kilkenny, don't fucking validate all those dudes who were hitting on you when you were trying to do work. In a piece critiquing male feminism, he's touted as an example of an ally who strikes the right tone, telling Slate, any struggle I face is about 0.0001% of the struggle women face in their day-to-day existence. For years, he was a prime example of how a good progressive man should act, but multiple women have recently come forward with stories of being singled out by the popular comedian they think had long, they had long admired, who they say he, exploited his status and feminist principles to make sexual advances towards them. The allegations and subsequent responses launched a conversation about allyship and men who call themselves feminists, adding to a slowly developing conversation about misogyny and comedy. Yeah, there were people that like, he would see, like, I was going through a hard time and he like would come on to me or talk to me about something and then basically try to fuck and then go on this radio show and brag about fucking me, which I'm like, ooh, how, you know what I mean? Like, and then how do you tell people? Cause right. Everybody, that's everybody's fave. Everybody's fave. Like, not just whether they believe you or not, but they don't want to believe this of this dude, you know? But yeah, so, Women in Media and News founder Jennifer Posner tweeted that Kilstein's behavior was inexcusable and pointed to a Twitter thread by writer Josh Sharia. Sharia. I think that's how you pronounce it, but I may have said it wrong and I'm sorry because I actually follow that dude. After Jamie Kilstein, I'm done with male feminists. If you throw that term around, you're suspect to me. On Saturday, days after the allegations surfaced, Saturday Night Live aired a sketch lampooning men who perform feminism to pick up women. Jezebel talked to three women with stories outlining how Kilstein allegedly uses feminism and popularity to make sexual advances on them. One woman who requested anonymity first met the comedian as a fan, was later invited to join the Citizen Radio podcast as its only staff member at the time. 1 year into the job, he decided that he wanted me to travel to a show with him that, and I had never done that before. On the train ride to a gig, she said that he commented on how an onlooker might think that they were flirting. Later that day, he suggested watching TV together in her hotel room and the relationship became sexual that night. According to the woman, Kilstein was still in a committed marriage to Kilkenny, but the affair stretched for almost 2 years. She said she tried to break things off multiple times, but was unable to. He never accepted that I was really done. So there were several times when I tried to break up the relationship, but he's my boss. And I have to talk to him every day and I have to answer his emails and I have to tweet at him. I had to convince people to pay him money to talk on stage. So if he wanted to talk to me, I had to talk to him. She left Citizen Radio in September 2014 when the show ran out of money for her position and continued a relationship with Kilstein until May 2015 when she said she ended all contact by blocking his phone number, email address, and social media accounts. Yeah, that's also wild because that's your employee.
Right.
So technically, how the fuck can they really say no while you're in the relationship? Now, after they left, I mean, who knows? Cause I mean, it seems like it kept going for a while.
What he said to her, yeah, like, threats he might have. Well, I'll come out and said I did this and shame you, like, not trying to find, like, you never really know what he told her,
or just, you know, that emotional manipulation, like, you don't think I'm a bad guy, I can explain right. away all my shit. Mm-hmm. You see the kind of things I talk about when I'm not around, how can you think I'm a bad guy? I mean, I'm sure he wasn't being like, I'm cheating on my wife because I'm just out here trying to get some pussy. Like, I'm sure he was saying it in a way where it was like, maybe they having problems or something, you know. It wasn't, I'm sure it wasn't this, you know, overt ass way of coming on to people that we like to think of, you know. Right. Another woman, a 22-year-old college student from Ohio, struck an online friendship with him after he liked one of her tweets in November 2015. He then sent her a direct message. I was starstruck, but because he's a pretty famous podcaster, she said in an interview with Jezebel. She mentioned that she and her boyfriend were big Citizen Radio fans. Later, he gave her a shout out on the podcast, but then his messages turned into unwanted flirtation. She says he repeatedly mentioned her committed relationship. Jezebel obtained screenshots of one segment of the conversation where he told the woman, but if he hurts you, your rebound is now lined up. Basically saying him, I guess. In another exchange, she asked Kilstein to tone down the flirting. He said he apologized, but later resumed flirting with her. It was like a creepy dude at a bar trying to get him to leave you alone, bringing up a boyfriend. I thought, this is a feminist. I shouldn't have to have another man kind of to dissuade him from being creepy and respecting my boundaries. She said that Kilstein offered to send her gifts, fly her out to Ohio to meet her, and told her that he never met another girl like her. She ended the Twitter conversation December 2015, wondering if she had misinterpreted something or misbehaved in some way. He would always say, these feminist ideals I align with. I was so confused why he was kind of going against what feminists stood for. When I ended it, I would go through our messages and see where I was wrong. I could have been more strict with him, she said. This alleged behavior is stark contrast to comments Kilstein's made on the aforementioned Citizen Radio podcast episode from this past August, in which he complained of getting too many flirty emails and stuff from fans and told his listeners to stop trying to have sex with me.
Right, because everything's their fault.
Yeah, humble brag. Another longtime Citizen Radio fan, Julie, 32, says they formed an unlikely friendship after she sent him a Facebook message in 2015. His response was flirtatious, but at the time, Julie didn't consider it inappropriate. This is Jamie. He's a feminist. He's a safe person. She explained of her thought process about the situation. They met briefly at one of Kelsey's shows in 2015, and she saw him again at another show in 2016. She offered to show his band a good vegan restaurant after the show, but she said he was more interested in hanging out with her alone. I was flattered. Essentially, he charmed me back to this hotel that night. I chose to go. I'm a survivor of sexual assault, so me being able to touch a man again was a big deal to me. That night, she opened up to Kelsey about her assault, and that night was actually really special to me. She said, I remember thinking, I got to feel safe again tonight because of Jamie. However, months later, she said she heard him refer to women he slept with on the tour as road fucks on the podcast. Jezebel was not able to obtain the episode containing this quote. As someone who listens religiously, I knew he was speaking about me, she said. All of that trauma came crashing back down. In response, she wrote a letter about the shame, anger, and pain that she felt and sent it to a weekly advice podcast, The Struggle Bus.
That's my show. I'm not to get off topic, mm-hmm. but for those of you out there, The Struggle Bus, they're these two white women, and they talk about struggles, and they talk about all types of different struggles, and it is actually a really, really great show. They're very open, they're very honest, they talk about mental health, they talk about sexual assault, suicide. Like, it is a very great show. But go ahead, I'm sorry.
No problem. So she wrote into that. The podcast co-host Catherine Heller read it out loud in an episode called Pure Imagination in September. In the letter, Julie, who was identified in the podcast by the pseudonym Mad Cat, writes, I was nothing but a conquest. Safety, how can I feel that after this experience, after all the experiences, how do I trust? Her letter spurred a discussion on the podcast's private Facebook group in which women shared similar experiences they had, and they realized the trauma pointed back to the same man. We shared notes on what he said as if it were a script, and the previous mentioned woman who worked for Kelsey, the woman I spoke to said that someone in the group approached Kilkenny about the allegation in February but did not reveal whom. In a Facebook post February 27th, Heller wrote that she too had been experiencing some inappropriate behavior from Kelsey, who I originally considered an inspiration, an ally, and a friend. And yeah, she talked about how she couldn't appear on the show anymore. And it wasn't a hard decision to make, but it was a heartbreaking one. Now, of course, no women have filed like a formal complaint. There's no like accusation of criminal behavior. But you know, it is that fine line that people walk, man. And I don't know how, I don't know how like people can be so like fucking one way in public and one way in private or whatever. Like, and there is like a line where like you flirt with your friends, you make jokes, and you're like, oh, that's bae or whatever. But then there's also like, you was cheating on your woman, you was trying to fuck, you was fucking women on the road, you were bragging about it on your show.
And so you have, who actually, not your, and these are the women that they know of.
Right.
All jokes aside, who knows how many hundreds of women that actually feel the same way and just like, fuck it, he talking about me, but I'm not going to come forth. I don't want nobody to know who I am, but I'm on that list too. These are just the ones that they know of, because this show is huge, y'all. They travel, all types of things. So her and who, hundreds, possibly maybe thousands of other women listen to that shit, because you know, you present yourself as a feminist and go, oh shit, you talking about me.
I just feel sad for you know, that the show and the people involved, because
right,
you know, it only take one person to really fuck up a good thing.
That's it,
you know. And then the other thing that's very weird to me is or just like, I don't feel threatened as a man that talks about these things, because I know there are people that are like, and now, I mean, what's gonna happen to me? Am I gonna go down? I don't feel bad and I don't feel threatened because I'm not gonna do this shit. Like, I've seen people that were like, I feel kind of like it makes me feel sad, or it makes me feel scared, and I'm a man and I operate and talk about feminist ideals and shit, and what's gonna happen to me? I don't know. Don't go out here and be emotionally manipulative and try to fuck your fans and talk about it on your shows and shit. Like, maybe just don't do the things he did.
Don't do the things he did.
You know, it's like a cop saying, like, I'm scared that I'm gonna get accused of killing an innocent black person. Then don't. You know, maybe just don't shoot innocent black people. I don't know why that would be your biggest fear. To me, the bigger fear would be having my show become some gateway for people to fucking abuse and manipulate folks, and then just hide behind the idea like, but I'm popular on this show. You know, like if I found out Justin was out here like doing some untoward shit, that's more my nightmare than fucking what about me. You know, you control your actions. You should know. You know, I don't know, man. It just felt weird. Like, I saw a lot of like, but what, how am I gonna still be a male feminist? I don't know. Don't do the things he did.
Don't do that. That's all I can say. Don't do it.
Yeah, I don't know why that was so, it's not that deep. All right, let's see. Faison Love got arrested at an airport in Columbus for beating up a employee at the airport.
Female?
Faison Love. Oh. You mean one of these black feminists he was beating up?
I mean, I'm just asking. It might be a man, but, you know.
Well, apparently, he pled not guilty to assaulting a valet at John Glenn Columbus International Airport. According to court documents filed with Franklin County Municipal Court, Love and a 24-year-old man were in a verbal argument when Love grabbed the man by his neck, threw him on the ground, and into a desk, according to court documents. The documents show the man says he was cut above the eye. The incident happened near the valet booth and baggage claim. Defense attorney John Moore explained Love's car had been parked there for a couple of months as he traveled to different gigs, and he was coming back to his home in Columbus. He was innocent. He was basically just trying to get his car. He was basically trying to get away from the incident, Moore said. If you see the video, it's like his attorney is tripping, but you gotta say what you gotta say. He ain't innocent. Like, nigga, he definitely slammed that dude around, and it wasn't a fight. Like, person was just standing there, and he basically bum rushed him.
I'm not trying. You don't get the benefit of the doubt. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, there's video.
I don't even see the video. Oh, okay. I just believe he did it. You don't get the benefit of the doubt.
Yes, he was surprised he was arrested. Yes, he was totally shocked by it, Moore said. Love has had run-ins before. The prosecutor listed past assault charges, sexual battery, domestic violence, and drugs.
You know what I'm saying?
Sexual battery. Love was released $2,000 bond. He walked out of the courthouse taking pictures with fans. Fans? Y'all niggas showed up to the courthouse? For real? That's a thing? Somebody lost their cool. Somebody got taught a lesson, Love said. As Love left jail, he was asked if he would, what he would say to the valet. He said, "Watch your mouth, boy." He made light of the latest incident, saying it would be part of his act when he performs at the Funny Bone next Wednesday. In a good way, because I love Columbus, he said. There you go. So watch your mouth, valet boy. Get fucked up. Mm-hmm. Yep. His fans just waiting on.
Yeah, because
I'm
going to get your
benefit of doubt, but mm-mm. Remy Ma says that she isn't particularly proud of Sheether.
Mm-hmm. Oh, what happened?
Apparently, she got interviewed on Another Round.
Okay, I haven't heard it yet, this episode, okay.
And she said she never wanted to go in on Nikki and had things not gone left. She believed they could have eventually made great music together. I do not condone or recommend the tearing down of another female. That's not what I do, she said. Anybody that knows me knows that I embrace females. I think we work so much better than when we work together than when we help and when we help each other. However, in the event that you piss me off, when we become arch enemies, run for cover. But Black Dynamite, I sell drugs to the community. She goes on to say, it just bothers me that this record when I put out where it's literally picking apart a female went so viral, and every media outlet wants to talk about it and pick it up, said Remy. I feel like we could have done the same thing working together. I just personally think it would have been so much cooler if we came together and made something crazy. It could have been totally different. I don't regret Sheetha, but I'm not particularly proud of it. Yeah, that does not, that seems very contradictory.
That's an oxymoron. I'm confused.
Yeah, I don't know that I, you can't really take back. I mean, you did.
You said you're females. I mean,
I just don't understand how, like, I don't know that, like, I just don't understand her point of view on that one. I'll just say that. Cause I mean, if you dissed the motherfucker, you dissed him. It's not like you accidentally dissed him. You had 7 minutes of shit to say about that woman, and then 3 more minutes 2 days later.
You could have made a music video, dog. Right?
Yeah, it wasn't. It was on Tidal and Apple and shit. Like, it wasn't an accident. It wasn't just a misunderstanding. It's weird to then go back and be like, if we need to build. Like, you did not seem to want to build. You seemed to be completely fine with the way things were. So that seems like a weird thing to say. I'll just leave it at that. I still like Sheetha. Like, I don't have any problem with it. Just, you know, it's like you diss somebody and then you hide your hand, you know?
Right, did somebody was like, hey dog, you fucking up your money? I mean, did somebody get a hold of her? I don't know.
I think people want to sound good. And it just sounds better to be like, why can't we come together? Why can't we build? Like, because that you chose to go in. You can't talk about her brother being a pedophile and saying she defend him and then be like, but why can't we get together? Like, you don't really want to get together. You just want to have it both ways. Maybe you just felt like it was the right thing to say on another round, or maybe the question was one where,
yeah, because you know that platform is humongous.
Yeah, and just that platform is very much like black women rooting for each other and shit. Mm-hmm. So maybe that was it. I don't know. I don't know how that would be a thing that would be said.
Who knows? The song may have even put you to the point where you would even consider it as a guest. Who knows?
Yeah.
Or you may have already been lined up. I don't know.
Yeah. Who knows? All right. Let's get into the segments. All right, guys. I guess we'll start with that old favorite, Fucking with Black People. We're just fucking with those black people. We're just fucking with those blacks. We're just fucking with black people. That's right, guys. It's time we all hate to play. Fucking with Black People. The game where we go all around the globe and we find different articles that make us feel fucked with. We assign point scores from 0 to 100 intervals of 25. Today's contestants, everybody. Everybody. Uncle Chuckus is back in the news. Charles Barkley says a lot of black people are full of shit. Yep, he had an interview with the Shadow League. When he was asked about blacks who question his blackness, he said he doesn't worry about criticism from his own people.
Oh, we know you don't care. This is not new to us.
I don't worry about that. Listen, my track record speaks for itself. The one thing I learned as a black man is every time I say something that's not 100% in agreement with the black community, there's a faction that go crazy. I don't care about that. People say to me, man, did you just give $1 million to a historically black college? I say, yeah. And they say, well, why didn't you tell anybody? And I say, I'm not trying to impress those cocksuckers. I just gave to Morehouse, Clark Atlanta, at Alabama A&M in Huntsville. $1 million, black kids go to college. I just gave Auburn $2 million to recruit black kids. I'm good with my blackness. Listen, man, one thing I understand about being black and famous is a lot of black people are full of shit. I'm good with that. So he gave money to the HBCUs, y'all. And people ask him all the time, why don't you tell people? And he's like, I ain't gonna tell nobody that I gave specific amounts to 3 different universities I just named in this interview. I'm not gonna tell nobody that. That's between me and those universities, okay? I'm not one to brag on myself to try to prove my blackness, okay? You can ask Morehouse, Clark Atlanta, Alabama A&M, okay? $1 million to help them black kids. but I ain't gonna tell nobody, okay? Between me and them. So you'll find out when you find out, if you find out, if somebody want to tell you. But don't question my blackness, all right? So yeah, 0 to 100, Karen.
It's Charles. It's Charles Barkley. This is kind of hard. You know what? I'm gonna give him 100.
That's terrible, Karen. I'm gonna go ahead and give him 112. I'm gonna give him, you know, I didn't win any rings, but I'm gonna give him 100. Yeah, he got 100. Come on, dog. I love how certain people's quote unquote pro blackness always end up with telling how all the other black people ain't shit.
Come on. Come on.
Let me tell you something. I'm not afraid to say black people ain't shit. Nigga, no one's afraid to say black people ain't shit.
Come on.
That ain't exactly a revolutionary statement.
You're not saying nothing new. And you basically, I don't care nothing about these nigga opinions when I say fucked up shit and I'm anti-black. And people go, yeah, people, and people coming at you, you know, some of the critique is not valid. But particularly when you've been anti-black, yes, people are going to say something.
Yeah. I wish he just... Honestly, man, I don't have a problem with his hot takes on sports and shit, to be honest.
Not with sports, no.
Like, if you want to be rude and call NBA games terrible and say all the good teams are trash and it was better back in your day, I don't mind that shit as much. I know a lot of people get mad at him for being the honorary old, I'll tell it like it is guy on TNT. That doesn't bother me.
Nope.
I only stopped watching TNT because I was like, why are you niggas talking about Ferguson and shit?
Right.
Like, you don't see Joe Buck having to give a conversation about Ferguson. You don't see ESPN taking fucking Mark Jackson and Van Gundy and being like, hey, can y'all break down what happened in Ferguson this week? Only TNT would do that. And I'm like, none of these niggas are scholars. None of these niggas are well-versed. They're not activists. They don't speak on these things in general.
It's not going to be a nuanced conversation because you're sticking this between basketball.
Yeah, I don't want Charles to have the race card as a TV show and shit like that. I don't mind him saying LeBron James is soft or some bullshit that I don't agree with, because at least that's sports, you know? But they really do a disservice to a lot of the NBA brand and a lot of the TNT brand by trotting this dude out here knowing he's ignorant and knowing that he takes pride in pissing a lot of black people off. Like,
right.
I don't understand why you would give somebody that. Well, I do understand why they gave him that platform.
Because if you piss white people off, they would get your ass off the air because they would demand that your black ass not be on the air.
A racist craft beer label services online. Apparently, Ralph Marion goes affectionately by the name of Beard Black Man on Twitter. And he was showboating his love for the craft beer industry, as many beer aficionados do. It was Marion who discovered and raised a brow when he came across a stout, appreciating the hashtag Black Lives Matter movement, popular beer rating title, Untappd. And it says Black Stouts Matter. Hashtag Black Stouts Matter is a label across the front, complete with a hashtag as if it's promoting a movement. So yeah, it's a beer hashtag Black Stouts Matter. I guess it's a dark stout beer. Well, what do you think, 0 to 100, Karen?
Oh, that's 100.
Alright, 100. Shout out to all the black people getting into talking about craft beer, though. Didn't know. You just never know what niggas is into. We into everything, man. Mm-hmm. Like, Where's My 40 Acres talks about it.
I hear people talk about it. When I go out, I actually start ordering more craft beers and more locally brewed beers with, like, different types of variations of fruits and all. And it has been a fun journey.
Yeah, CSPN Network talk about it. I mean, a lot of people talking about it.
Yeah, that's the thing. Niggas is really into everything. It's nothing that's just strictly a thing.
You just never know. But yeah, 100. A judge orders stiff sentences for two in a Douglasville hate crime. So apparently there was this hate crime. I think we may have covered it on the show, but there were some people waving Confederate flags and guns and threatening a black kid at his birthday party and shit. And they got arrested, and so they got sentenced this last week. They got some pretty stiff prison sentences. for their part in disrupting an African-American birthday party with Confederate flags, racial slurs, and armed threats, which, you know, the armed threats is pretty big. It's funny because there's a lot of people that are scared and upset, like, how can you do this to them and give them these very long sentences?
The white people got to be the victim. Even when they fucking commit crimes, they've got to be the motherfucking victim.
Yeah, now I think one of them isn't even one of them isn't even white. Like his last name is Torres or some shit, and he still was being racist. They sent Superior Tier Court Judge William McClain castigated the two, Kayla Ray Norton and Jose Ismael Torres, which, I mean, for real, bruh, like, what do you think you fall on the list of? You out here with a Confederate flag and gun picking on black kid, and when you get to the white supremacist meeting, they like, boy, you know you can't come in here. Like, you're like, but I hate black people. We hate all of y'all.
Right. You know? You a nigga too, beat it.
Right. But yeah, he sentenced Torres to 20 years with 13 to serve in prison. Norton got 15 years with 6 to serve. Upon their release, McClain ordered them to be permanently banished from Douglas County. Their actions were motivated by racial hatred, McClain said. Good. I mean, it's about time, you know, somebody would at least recognize it and bring it up, you know, and confront it.
Right. And the way this was covered was terrible. It's one of the things where I asked about, what about the kids in Wisconsin? What about the white on white crime? How were they raised? These thugs turned around and bashed this birthday party. You know, nobody is presented like that. It's all these poor white people. These people were minding their own fucking business.
Right. A kid.
Right.
You know, like
a child. And shout out to Black Ass Podcast. She was talking about how the parents invested all this money. Like, this baby didn't have no cheap birthday party. Like, the parents went all out. So, you know, if a black parent is spending all this money on a birthday party, ain't no way in the hell you gonna come and ruin the birthday party. They didn't go to McDonald's. They actually invested some money in their child.
Mm-hmm. And now I sit up here and y'all gotta ruin it.
Right. Now we gotta deal with some racist ass flags. At least you could have bought a present or some shit. You just came and ruined the party.
They must have been feeling strong off of that Trump juice.
Come on.
That Trump juice is real. Got people right. Acting and a damn fool.
I'm surprised Jose, whatever his name is, they ain't deport him back to Canada. Mexico is part of his sentence.
Yeah, well, that's
ice him.
Mm-mm, not yet. The video.
This is a birthday party.
Look at this shit.
We'll see y'all again.
Yeah, they so extra. They got like fucking 40 fucking flags on each truck.
Woo! We're gonna see y'all again. We're gonna see y'all again. Alright.
So that's the video. And then that's the perpetrators. And that's them crying during sentencing. Oh my god.
Oh, that's hilarious.
They really put Mad World in there with them crying. Yeah.
Fuck you. Go to jail.
Mm-hmm.
So this was the other way around. It'd be the fucking top story, and people be calling them thugs and gangsters and talking about the kids in Chicago and what about black on black violence. Fuck them.
Yep. Torres did not address the court during the proceedings, only crying when three of his family members took the stand to describe him as a hardworking plumber, volunteer football coach, and devoted father of three. His children's mother, Norton, however, addressed several people who attended the birthday party and had come to witness the sentencing. I do not accept responsibility for what I've done, Norton said, choking on her words as she spoke directly to the group. What happened to you was absolutely awful. From mother to mother, I cannot imagine having to explain what that word means. Norton was referring to the racial epithet her group, Respect the Flag, right? Repeatedly heralded at the party attendees, which included Karen, it's about Southern heritage and pride. I don't know why people keep associating this with racism. I can't just be proud of my flag.
About that passion.
Her group, Respect the Flag, repeatedly heralded at the party attendees, which included adults and small children. Douglas Assistant District Attorney David Imadi detailed how the group had gone on a drunken rampage through Douglas and Paulding counties July 24th and July 25th.
Ain't nobody.
How long was y'all niggas drunk?
Not only that, why weren't y'all charged with driving drunk?
Mm-hmm. And pickup trucks laden with Confederate battle flags. Imadi said the group threatened black motorists, yelled at them, and walked up to one of their cars with a gun. They also threatened African-American shoppers at Paulding County Walmart and at a convenience store. Many good people in Paulding County saw you for what you are, McClain said before he handed down the sentences. Everywhere you went, 911 call centers were flooded with calls.
Oh, I see what you said, because what they're doing, they was getting bombarded with calls. They was like, look, nah, dawg. And somebody, whoever this judge was, I don't know who the judge was like, look. Even if he tried to quote unquote ignore it and watch it, they were like, look, we got front of 100 911 calls. I got to, you tied my hands, but I got to sentence you.
I want to report a hate crime, he said of one of the calls. Norton and her children's father continued to cry. The two are not married. Why is that in the article? The two are not married.
Who gives a fuck?
Really? AJC.com? The fuck would that have to do with anything? What? This is a double hundred, man. What the fuck? It has nothing to do with shit. Yeah, I don't know what that has to do with anything.
Of course, because you said you talked about his wife, which is not her, was on, you know, was.
Okay. So the white girl who is the, Norton is the white girl who was part of the hate crime. And they're saying her parents aren't married. But it still feels so irrelevant.
Oh, yeah, who cares?
Oh, no, they're saying her and her children's father are not. Okay, her and her baby daddy ain't married. That's what they were saying.
Oh, okay.
Okay, no, I thought they were talking about her parents. Yeah, all right, okay. All right, I guess they're trying to just break down, like, is she a white woman? She shitting on these women. She ain't got a man. I don't know. Maybe that was just shade. I take it back, AJC. I take it back. As she addressed the victims, Norton said that she and Torres made a choice to attend both days of her group frenzy. It was an option she now regretted. The worst decision I ever made in my life was to not walk away when I had the choice. McClain noted that Torres and Norton acted with the full knowledge that less than a month earlier, white supremacist Dylan Roof had massacred 9 African Americans at a Charleston, South Carolina church. And just as several members of the victim's family in that case publicly forgave Roof in a South Carolina courtroom, Haisha Bryant, 34, offered forgiveness to Norton and Torres. She had attended the birthday party and 8-year-old celebration complete with a jumpy castle and snow cone machine. She also reminded...
Snow cone machine. Woo! She went all out.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd have been mad, too.
Adia was right. She also reminded them of the choices they make over 2 days that ultimately led to McClain's packed Douglas County courtroom. I never thought this would be something I'd have to endure in 2017, Bryant began. As adults and parents, we have to instill in our children the values of right and wrong. That moment, you had to choose to leave and you stayed. Then Bryant clutched her chest, leaning forward towards Torres and Norton and looked them in the eyes. I forgive all of you. I don't have any hate in my heart. Life is too short for that. I guess. Torres and Norton, who earlier were found guilty of violating the state street gang terrorism law, continued to tremble and cry. Their attorneys argued for lighter sentences, saying the two defendants, Thomas Charles Summers and Lacey Paul Henderson II, had pleaded guilty to terroristic threats and battery charges and received less time than Norton and Torres were facing. Summers is serving 4 years in prison and Henderson is serving 2. McClain, however, said Torres and Norton would have to answer for their behavior. He also called into question the Douglasville Police Department's decision not to arrest any of the Respect the Flag group that day. He called it inexplicable and a very bad mistake.
Come on.
Yep. 0 to 100, Karen.
Oh, I'm not fucked with it at all. Nah. Mm-mm. Go to jail. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200.
Mm-hmm. Nah, I'm not fucked with it at all either. Sometimes you just gotta go to jail. It's not.
Sometimes you got to go to jail.
I don't gotta feel bad about it.
You going to jail now?
Them black, that black kid didn't do nothing to you.
Right, like you ruined that baby party.
And now you want to be
remember that for the rest of their life.
Yeah. Now you want to be a victim on the back end. Mm-mm. Right. Mm-mm. You victimize an 8-year-old, but on the back end, you want to be like, but I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
And I have sinned.
But that dude with the 3 kids, he'd have some birthday parties and some black people would have came in there and ruined his child's birthday party. Had a fucking fit. Fuck you.
Yep. No, especially after Dylann Roof.
Come on, right. So people were already heightened. They didn't know if you were going to shoot them or kill them. And then you run around fucking terrorizing people in this area right after Dylann Roof. You're pulling out guns on people. Black people just minding their fucking business. And people wonder why black people are always in a panic. And why black people go, nah, I get too many white people together. I got to check out. I got to leave. I don't want to be the only one nowhere anymore. Because you go, hey, if the tide turns, I might be a victim.
Who radicalizing these white folks, man? Right? Who radicalizing these white folks? Like, we always talking about, people always talking about, like, who's radicalizing, Muslims or, you know, terrorist organization or Black Lives Matter is terrorists and shit like that. Who is radicalizing these white folks? I just want to know.
Somebody is.
So, right? I mean, why don't that count?
They recruit them too.
I mean, that's a whole ass group. That ain't a terrorist organization? Making terroristic threats to a child at their birthday party? That's a whole ass group, dog. They weren't one or two people. That's an organization. They communicate. That's a cell. It's a terrorist cell. Anyway, 100 for the original infraction, but 0 for these niggas going to jail for a long time. Peace.
I don't care.
See ya.
Go to jail.
Wouldn't want to be ya.
You committed a crime, and you know I understand forgiveness and things like that. But what pisses me off? Why is black people expected to forgive you and they're still bleeding? Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's journey is individual, and if you want to forgive somebody, then that's your right. But yeah,
the wound ain't healed. I'm like, I know I just stabbed you. Can you forgive me? Can you forgive me? Can you forgive me? You get the fuck out of my face.
Yeah, I just think the media like hypes up the people that do that because they know it shouldn't be expected, and they know people don't deserve it, and they know it's sensational, and that's why they hype up the people that do it. But yeah, I feel like you can't even get a breath before it's like
you don't even go through the healing process. Get out of here.
But yeah, so okay, let's see. A video of a white student's racist remark prompts a protest at a North Carolina school. So apparently, let me see if I can play this. Oh, black, I think I heard black piece of shit in there somewhere.
No, you playing the video, we can't see it.
Y'all can't see the video?
I'm thinking if that's what you're trying to do, we don't see it.
Oh, because I didn't hit share yet. Okay, hold on. Sorry about that.
No problem.
All right, now let's see if I can try. Let's see if it shares this time. Something went wrong publishing to the stream. Okay, let's try it one more time, guys. Should be showing up in a second.
There you go.
All right. That's So it looks like the white dude did something to the black kid to start this. Oh, it looked like the black dude grabbed his book bag and threw him to the ground. So I don't know if what started this, and we caught it in the middle or what. Let me read this article. All right, Micah Street, a black student at Wake Forest High School in North Carolina, was suspended from school after an altercation between him and a white student. Video of the incident was shared on Instagram by user Tyler Goodell, who said his friend Michael was defending himself from racist abuse. The video starts with a white student already on the floor, escalates toward the end when the teacher steps in, seemingly yelling at Street for getting physical with the student. The teacher responds in a way that is dismissive of Michael's concern, noting that the white student only used words. Based on the video, it sounds as though the white student called Micah a black piece of shit. Street told CBS North Carolina the altercation happened as a result of the other student's racist remarks over the last few months. He said he lost his temper after being threatened by the other students. Street was originally intended for suspended from school for 10 days, but it was later reduced to 5. Students at the school chanted and protested in support of Micah on Monday. Bring Micah back, was a chant. His mother told CBS, how am I going to send my son back to Wake Forest and what I want to know, because I'm sending him back to the shooting range is what I'm doing. So I'm totally clueless. I don't know what to do. So it sounds like from the description, the video is catching him retaliating after he's been harassed for a long time.
Right.
Well, it's interesting, right? Because on the one hand, you don't want to get physical, and it almost always does lead to worse results for the black person. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, you're only human.
You're going to take so much, right?
Like, you can only, yeah, you, like, it,
and that's
like,
something people don't understand. And then, you know, everybody put like this. And what's really, really frustrating with me is that people put unrealistic expectations on other people that they don't put on themselves. You know, for some people, if you look at them halfway wrong, they're ready to go upside your head, but yet you expect other people to just be patient and tolerable and just take all types of shit and take all types of abuse and not say nothing and turn the other cheek and just quote-unquote always say the right thing at the right time and always be, you know, act the right way at all time. Yeah, 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 yeah. Then at the end of the day, you wouldn't do this yourself.
Yeah, it's definitely not fair. And honestly, I don't understand. I would love to know what was happening before this.
Right, because that,
you know, were they
too
reporting that this racial harassment was happening? Because it does seem to be the attitude in even involved in this was, they're just words. Was that something you heard for months? And he just decided, fuck it, I'll do it myself. Because I know when I was a bully, and I want to say the eighth grade, there was this kid that just wouldn't leave me alone. And, I tried to do everything that, you know, my dad taught me, you know, don't say shit, just let it go. Don't worry about it. It was a white kid. And we ended up, fighting after school one day. And I remember it was like a bunch of white dudes and then me and him were just out there. And they like kind of surrounded me, and it was like,
right, well, you really couldn't get away,
right? And I knew for a fact, like, okay, these white kids are probably more on his side than mine. There weren't enough black kids, so I was like, nah, I'm not doing this. Like, I'm not fighting,
right,
you out here.
Y'all to jump me,
yeah, because knowing you motherfuckers, yeah, I don't trust y'all, and y'all are way more his friends than mine. Mm-hmm. and shit. So I decided not to fight that day, and I think that made him think, well, this motherfucker is some type of coward or some shit. But it was really just, I could just hear my dad's voice every time it was about to be a fight. My dad is just like, don't do this, don't do that, don't say this, you can't hit people unless they do this, that, and the other to you. And so I remember one day in school, we had the same gym class, and I went, and he was talking shit to me the whole gym class. Same thing. I didn't say anything. I just, you know, basically was like, not gonna let this dude get in my head, just gonna go to class. After this class, I go to a different class. I don't have to worry about this dude. And he said some shit to me, and I just turned my back, walked into the locker room, and he followed me into the locker room all the way down towards my locker. And then the way that the locker room is set up, there are these benches in between the different sides of the locker. So there's like a locker on one side, bench, then a locker on the other side. Mm-hmm. And so he was on the other side of the bench, and he was just talking, you know, talking
just there,
shit.
He didn't have no other reason to be there other than to taunt you.
Right. And so I finally, like, he got too close to me, and I just turned around, I grabbed him by his shirt collar, and I used the bench as leverage and threw him over the bench, slammed him on the ground, and started beating the fuck out of him. And, you know, after I punched him for a while, you know, cause he was on the ground. It was in front of everybody. He was definitely embarrassed. People were pulling me off of him and shit. And so after they pulled me off of him, I walked right into the principal's office and was like, I want to report what happened.
And that's what you do, because when they tell the story, it is not going to be the same.
Right. And I was, I want y'all to call my parents, and I want to talk to somebody about me being harassed.
Right.
And, you know, when he saw me in the office, cause I guess he got up afterwards and he saw me in the office, and he was in there like, calling me all kinds of names and shit. But the event, like, after that, they called our parents and got him involved, because But I had endured months of this. Like, this wasn't a short period of time. Like, he had thrown scissors at me in a class.
What?
Yeah, dead serious. He had, you know, done little shit like try to bump my arm or my shoulder when he walked past rather than just walking past. Like I said, try to fight me after school. It was just shit like that where it was like, I just knew like the teacher's not gonna take this serious. You know, like even when he threw the scissors at me, it was, you guys need to cut it out. Like we were both involved in it. Like, no, it's one way. When, you know what I mean? Like, if he would took my eye out, it would have been okay, right? Like then y'all would have been like, somebody should have said something. Like, so just the whole way it was treated, and I could definitely see something like that being the case. Now, I don't know all the details of what happened here, but if he says he's been being harassed for months, and then you lash out, I mean, if someone had a video of what happened in that locker room when I, you know, beat up Taylor, they would have been like, oh, this black kid beat up this white boy and just jumped him for no reason. He just grabbed him, slammed him on the ground, started hitting him. But if you had, that's because there's no video of the months of, you know, him saying fucked up shit towards me. There's no video of that. You know, there's no video of it escalating because, you know, I had the nerve to be like, you say something smart to me and I say something smart back. You know, there's no video of him calling me a bitch. There's no video of him bumping my shoulder. So it just make, when I see that, I know how it's going to be viewed as this big black kid yanked this kid's book bag twice. And like you said, the teacher runs right up and the first thing is, he's just using words and shit like that.
Right, which was the wrong fucking thing to say.
Right. So it's like, yeah, someone called me a black piece of shit, maybe I'm not gonna have the words back for him. Maybe, right. Maybe he can, he's using words and I'm gonna use my hands. Now what? You know? Anyway, I'm fucked with it cause it reminds me of that time. See, 100 for me. Mm-hmm. I have no idea what happened and I have no idea what was attempted to intervene in this situation, which to be honest, it's still not too late. Nobody was hurt, thank goodness, in that clip. And the students showing up saying that they support Micah makes me feel like they saw the harassment and they know nothing was done.
Right.
And they know that he was justified in lashing out. Mm-hmm. That's just how I feel watching the story and how the students support him.
I believe.
Cause
that.
I feel like if he was just some big ass bully black kid that goes around beating up people
he
and shit.
Gotten the support from the students.
Yeah. I think the students would have been like, thank God he's out of school.
Right.
All right, did you say 0 to 100?
Oh, 100. I just agree with you.
All right, go back to the fields of Alabama. North Carolina middle school chants KKK in viral video. Yeah, that's, I'm sure America there's some.
Mm-hmm, making America great again.
I'm sure there's some possible good reason for this, right? Wait, my computer don't support Flash no more? Since when, nigga? It's been flashing all day. All right, I can't play this video. Maybe I can find it on YouTube. I'm sorry, guys. Give me a second. I did not realize this video wouldn't play suddenly.
I wish they would get rid of Flash. You just make some shit simple and it wouldn't crash.
Yeah, that's such a weird... Leesville. Maybe if I put Leesville Middle School. Racism? What do you think the video will come up? I don't know if that's enough information. Oh, racist video says shockwaves. Okay, all right, well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, YouTube got everything. Put string the right phrase the word together, you get the video.
Yeah, racist video sends shockwave through Leesville Road Middle School.
Mm-hmm. Is it something for us to see?
I'm trying to see if it'll play first. Okay. If I'm gonna get that flash
error
again, because if so, then I can't really show
and
it
and it's
to
funny
you.
It look like a sad Lego block every time I see it. Like, what is this sad ass Lego block on my screen?
Mine just said your shit don't work without Flash, homeboy. I don't know what you thought was gonna happen.
And then it probably ain't a Lego block, probably some kind of plug-in, but it's like a sad ass Lego block.
Yeah, let's see, then come aware of the video, on a phone message, the principal here, and then okay, what is this video exactly though? And why isn't it playing? Okay, I think it's gonna play now. I mean, after a few days.
Ah! It's like it's trying to play.
Y'all guess as good as mine.
Want the look of hardwood, but not the worry of water? Get the best selection of woodland.
I do want to know about hardwood and waterproofing on my floor. So, I mean, that's at least we got that going, guys. Mm-hmm. Total waterproof protection, guys. Good to say. Make sure you guys go to getbevel.com/tvgwt.
Yep.
Hook yourself up. Make sure that you get your face looking tight. And other areas, okay?
Right. Support Shout It All Productions.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying. Loot Crate. All right, let me see if I can turn the volume up now.
After students post a racist rant online.
A parent told school administrators about that video. Those administrators are now taking action. Up is live at the Valley School with the video to show us and reaction from school officials and parents tonight. Ed?
Well, Steve and Tisha, although a message.
You know, that's a black man, Stephen Tisha. By the way, I love black news anchor ladies have like real black names.
Me too. Cause
like for some reason the default voice in news is you have to talk like a white person almost. So it's like, and coming up later, so-and-so, I'm your host, Genetica Balls. You're like, Genetica, yes! Get it, Genetica.
Yes, yeah, especially the anchor desk.
Say what?
Especially I love when they're at the anchor.
Yeah.
But then they ain't out in the field. You got to pronounce that name right. The black lady named Shaquandra.
Right.
And Rick is posted up there. Your morning news starting at 4 a.m.
That's my fave.
Yes,
man.
It is.
I don't know if other black people get off on that, but I do.
Me too.
It's like Steve Jones and Shaniniqua Jones will also be talking. I'm like, yes, Shaniniqua.
Live at 6 p.m. Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Because sometimes when you listen to news, you can't tell if that person black or not because of how they talk. So you can just hear the audio and until they drop that, like, I'm Alizé Jenkins. You're like, oh, I hear you, old girl. I hear you, girlfriend. Get yours. I wonder if white people don't have that, do y'all? Maybe with the weatherman. I'm Storm Sprinkly. Oh, shit.
That ain't their real names.
I know.
They'll be like, I'm Thunderstorm Snowflake. That ain't no goddamn name. How the fuck you get to name everything after weather?
I'll be back. Larry Showers coming up after the break.
Right.
But back to you.
Right.
Back to you, Shaquanda.
They'll be like, I'm Wind Autumn. No, sir. That is not your name. No.
Now back to Leviticus. All right.
Well, Steve and Tisha, although a message went out to Leesville Middle parents about the video, many of them have not actually seen it. In it, three Leesville Middle students go on a rant about several minority groups and in the process use derogatory terms for blacks and Latinos.
Here in America, we don't accept Jews, Arabs, or go back to the fields of Alabama. Go back to the factories in Mississippi. You don't deserve freedom.
Preach!
K-K-K.
Today we caught up with Luann Grichow.
I was not ready. I was not ready.
You weren't ready for the unfiltered bigotry?
Woo!
Go back to the fields of Alabama. But you know what, Karen? Woo! The new generation gives me hope.
Preach. I was not ready for the hatred church. I'm sorry.
Well, luckily, the new generation gives us all hope, right? It's the young kids that are going to change this country. The middle schoolers who look forward to a day where we can all work
together. The 12 and 13 year olds.
Mm-hmm. Back to the fields of Alabama. You don't know anybody from the fields of Alabama, you 13 year old piece of shit. What do you know about the field? They don't even teach that in your school. Where'd you learn that? That's only one chapter. They don't even say which fields it was in your chapter.
Yeah, all the children you talk to come from your local neighborhood.
The involuntary immigration chapter of your, it's like one paragraph long in your textbook. So how do you know about the fields of Alabama? Come on.
And her husband, whose son is a sixth grader at Leesville Middle, they had not seen the video.
How ridiculous is this? Yeah. And that's confirmed that it's kids from Leesville Middle School?
The Grichowskis somehow hadn't received the recording sent out by Leesville Middle School's principal yesterday.
At Leesville Middle, the expectation is that we adhere to high standards for all students. This video violates those standards, and its message will not be condoned in our school.
The two-minute-long message goes on to say that the students, whose faces were visible in the original post, have been identified and appropriately disciplined. The principal also says all students will be given a better understanding of the community where we live and learn more about their responsibilities on social media. But Lou Ann Gruchowski says the responsibility isn't just on the schools.
And I think it's everyone's responsibility in the community to follow up on stuff like that and to make sure, you know, we're really talking to our kids and making sure that they are becoming the human beings that we all know and want them to be.
Gruchowski says she can't imagine seeing her son in this kind of video.
Very shocked and very disheartened, and it would require a very, an intervention of great proportions.
The video, she hopes, is a wake-up call to the parents of the three students.
It reflects a certain type of mindset and character that, you know, needs some attention paid to it for sure.
For sure, and we should note that it does not appear that that video was shot here at the school. Steve and Tisha, in addition to saying that the school officials saying that they will talk to students about sensitivity issues, they're also offering counseling to any students who may have been upset by that video.
They are taking action, and it's turning into a classroom lesson now for all of those children. Ed, thank you.
Yeah, classroom lesson. Mm-hmm. Teachable moment. Yes, it's teachable moment.
I never believed them when they say that.
Mm-hmm. Back to the fields of Alabama, guys. Yes, you're going to 100, Karen.
100.
Yeah, that's pretty much 100. All right, let's see if we can get into some lighter fare, guys. Okay, this has been it's been quite a lot, and I definitely understand why would bother everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we can get into some white people news. Let me see. What are white people listening to these days? How about how about this one? I don't think I played this one.
So hold my hand, I'll walk with you, my dear.
The stars creak as you sleep, it's keeping me awake.
It's the house telling you to close your eyes.
It's soft days, I can't even trust myself.
It's killing me to see this way. Cause though the truth may bury this, ship will carry on.
Hey. All right.
Who is that? What's happening here?
White people music for white people news, Karen. It's Little Talks by Of Monsters and Men.
Okay, because I've never heard it before, so I was like, maybe it's still a music soundtrack. I don't know.
White people love it. First got started with that child man, that person that white people put in the White House.
Yeah, 45, to make him want to drink a 45.
DeVos lobbyist resigns amid controversy over comments about shaking his wife. Yeah, apparently there's a lobbyist that promoted the education agenda of the now U.S. Education Secretary Betsy DeVos in Michigan, and he had to resign from his position because apparently he has taken heat in recent days of a comment he made while testifying last week before a legislative commission. Expressing his frustration with the state school reform officer, he is charged with closing down failing schools. He said, "I wanted to shake her like I like to shake my wife."
Anybody checked on his wife?
He later apologized. "What I said last Tuesday was a poorly worded ad lib and bad analogy during the Q&A portion of a legislative testimony."
Mm-mm, nope, you meant that, sir.
"This is something that a professional communicator should avoid, and I really let myself and GLEP down with my verbal gaffe. I have seen." So he resigned by email.
I'm surprised he resigned, because now they're like, fuck it. Y'all got to vote me or kick me out.
He's going to take some time to reorganize to best continue the advocacy of quality school choice options in all Michigan.
Your wife.
Okay. Yes.
I'm sorry.
Nope. That's fine. I didn't want to finish that story anyway, to be honest with you. Fuck that dude.
Right. Not saying he did or didn't, but I mean, if you bad enough said, you feel like putting your hands on your wife.
Gotta be both sides, Karen. Gotta be two sides.
Ain't no two sides.
He's my fave, Karen. I can't, have you really thought about it from his standpoint?
Mm-mm, don't care about from his standpoint.
Okay, all right.
Ain't no two sides.
You're not helping yourself or your husband's memory by standing there clapping like an idiot. Ex-Clinton and Obama volunteer is fired for a tweet about the seal widow at the Trump speech. So remember, Trump gave a address to the two, I forget what it was about, some live TV shit he did where he gave a speech and people was like, oh my god, I have to suck his dick. He didn't call anyone a nigger for 2 hours.
Oh yeah, State of the Union, but the first time he addressed the country.
Joint session or something. Yeah. All right, anyway, so one of the things that he did was he had there was a SEAL that was killed, a Navy SEAL that was killed because he authorized an operation to kill some terrorists.
Right.
The same operation that, you know, President Obama did not authorize.
Right.
And one of the SEALs got killed, and, you know, it was a lot of uproar at the time because, like, it was I think part of the reason he even greenlit it was because Obama wouldn't.
Right.
And he wants to, you know, basically everything he does is a dick measuring contest with Obama. And then secondly, it was like he was eating a meal, a steak, and just said, go do it or some shit. So it was like really flipping and casual, you know. Meanwhile, I remember when Osama bin Laden was killed and they like had Obama and Hillary Clinton and everybody like in a room, like watching this raid, right, like
watching it every, like they right. really watched the whole transition. And he's like, give me this burnt up steak with this ketchup. Yeah, go do it.
Right. So they had basically a glorified, photo op essentially with the widow of this man that his operation had killed, essentially.
Everything is fucking photo op for him.
Right. And so he had her there so that he could talk about
how great he is. Because everything is about how great he is, right?
Yeah, I mean, and he wanted to say something about like how great the sacrifice was that this man made for this country and died, and they had the camera on the widow and the widow started crying, and it was you know, this moment that was supposed to be like, look at Donald Trump being presidential. He also brought up how the applause break that they got was for her dead husband was so long that he would really be impressed, because I think just Trump measures everything in entertainment.
Versus, you know, she'd rather have her family member alive.
Right. Anyway, there was someone who tweeted, Dan Grillo, who is apparently former Hillary Clinton volunteer and Obama volunteer. He got fired because he tweeted out something critical of the moment at the time. He said, sorry, Owen's wife, you're not helping yourself or your husband's memory by standing there and clapping like an idiot. Trump just used you. And then of course everybody went in on his ass, which I think they should have. I mean, that's pretty fucked up to say. And I mean, that's the thing. People do this all the time. It's that thing where it's like, Trump isn't showing compassion to this woman, but then you're calling her, you're clapping like an idiot. Her husband just died. At least have some understanding of, like, you know, like, sure, a lot of people probably wish she wouldn't have done what she did.
A lot of people probably feel like she was being used too, but what right. you didn't do was what you did.
Right. But you can literally find a better way to say that. And so you got your ass fired, man. Like, he later said it was a poorly worded tweet and deleted it and apologized, but it was too late.
Yep.
So he ended up losing his job at the principal for a Chicago-based Liberty Advisor Group. So he was a principal for the Chicago-based Liberty Advisor Group, and he is no longer there. So watch what you say, dog. That's, I mean, everything can't be politics for the kids, for the games and shit.
Nope.
Van Jones defends presidential Trump praise, not saying he's George Washington, he says. So Van Jones, apparently after this joint session shit, said that some words like Donald Trump just became president of everybody and shit, because especially that moment with the Navy SEAL's widow. It was so people were pissed, you know, and I don't blame him for being pissed. I mean, I don't see how, but to be honest, I just don't really agree with a lot of his stances on shit, to be honest with y'all. Like, I understand there's a need for a Van Jones in the place that he's at. There's a need for people to be conciliatory or find some level of balance, and I think his job is a fucked up job because it's CNN and they bring on racists every segment to argue with Van Jones, right, and find some sort of quote unquote middle ground when there is none. But yep, he is one of those people that seeks to find the middle and shit, and the middle is gonna end up with a lot of like, these Trump people ain't bad people, they just made a bad decision, we can't write them out, we need them. There's gonna be a lot of that coming from him, and I don't agree with any of it. Mm-hmm. So, for the record, I don't think Van Jones is just like, cause what happened was he said this shit and it basically became like Uncle Tom's Coon sellout, you know, all this shit. I don't think that's him either, cause he's spoken out about race for years now, many segments, been the only black voice that was on the TV going ham against like Jeffrey Lord and shit. But I just think the bigger construct of, like basically white media spaces is already normalized racism. So the fact that you would have a Jeffrey Lord on and treat him like an expert with a Van Jones on who is an expert, you've already ceded the floor to the racist, in my opinion. There's certain people that should not have a platform, but CNN didn't give a fuck, they just want to get ratings. I mean, that's why they have Don Lemon on there. And right before this, Van Jones, who had been kind of one of the hardest critics of Trump period out there, I remember when they won and they were going like, you need to admit that we won, you know, and he called it a white lash and people were like spreading the video like, look at this, that's what I'm talking about, Van Jones, that he said it the best and all this shit. And now he a coon 2 months later. Like, he just coon ass coonie coonie coon nigga coon. So I think that was it hurt a lot of people's feelings to see him do that, but at the same time, man, he went out and defended his statement. So let me see if I play this video.
To be joined tonight by Corinne Owens, the widow of U.S.
Oh, wait, I think this is the video of Trump honoring her. Okay, yeah,
American,
all right.
Politics, period.
Let me see.
Okay, a warrior see, and a hero.
Oh, okay, hold on. Against terrorism, you're right.
And securing our nation.
Give me 1 second. I'll put it on screen. Because mm-hmm. It's basically Trump's words, and then it's going to go to Van Jones and show you what he said.
Okay.
Let me know when it pops up.
Okay, I will. I know sometimes it's a delay.
Mm-hmm.
And we see it.
All right.
He became president of the United States in that moment. Period. There are a lot of people who have a lot of reason to be frustrated with him, to be fearful of him, to be mad at him. But that was one of the most extraordinary moments you have ever seen in American politics, period. And he did something extraordinary. And for people who have been hoping that he would become unifying, hoping that he might find some way to become presidential, they should be happy with that moment. For people who have been hoping that maybe he would remain a divisive cartoon, which he often finds a way to do, they should begin to become a little bit worried tonight. Because that thing you just saw him do, if he finds a way to do that over and over again, he's going to be there for 8 years. Now, there is a lot that he said in that speech that was counterfactual, that was not right, that I oppose and will oppose. But he did something tonight that you cannot take away from him. He became president of the United States.
All right. So, and also that there's a lot he was counterfactual. You mean lies? He lied a lot. You know, why are we softening the language on that? Now, behind the scenes, there's some shit where apparently Trump's media people went out and contacted CNN's brass, who I think they're owned by Turner Media, whatever. Mm-hmm. And they basically singled out Anna Navarro and Van Jones and said that they are not happy with the coverage they're getting from those two, and they need to soften their tone towards the President Trump.
Right, but they're not influencing the news. Everything about Trump ain't praise.
Right. And all of a sudden you get this. Now, I'm not trying to say I'm a conspiracy theorist, but I don't think it's a coincidence.
I am. Fuck that nigga. Mm-hmm. I feel as though Trump loves praise. His thing is praise me.
Wait,
praise
when you
me.
Say fuck that nigga, who?
Trump.
Oh, okay.
Trump is about praise me. He has blocked media. He has stopped media. He has denied media access. It's like, if you do any form of criticize him in any way, and he can directly affect you, he can and he will, because he's that fucking, he's just a petty ass person that just happens to be in the president's office. For him to even have a meeting with them, their job is to report the news, whatever the quote unquote news is nowadays, not to make you feel good, not to stroke your dick and make you feel better. Like, him criticizing you is valid. Like, everything you do isn't fair and everything you do isn't right and everybody not going to agree with you. But I can truly say I've slowly seen the media go from praising him to criticizing him when he was like, fuck y'all niggas, to praising him again, because the only way to getting access to him is to praise him. And when you go, it's a conspiracy, he's influencing the media, he wants the media to be nothing but positive about him and put all these positive spins and not point out the truth to what he's doing, and people come to you to be informed about shit and you're not giving them the truth, that is a problem. And when it comes to Van Jones, going back to what you said, yeah, he was pulled out and that nigga was like, I got to pay my bills. You know, like, everybody else goes, I got to pay my bills every goddamn day. You deal with racism and sexism and shit at your job, too. You don't call it out every time it happens. You suck shit up. You bite the bullet. You go in there and you deal with the shit. And this was his way of dealing with it. I have a problem with what he said, but no, he is not a coon, in my opinion. I think that it was just to stroke of the ego of his bosses and to keep his job, because if this hadn't happened, he'd have still had his, in my opinion, he would have still had his hard stance. I think that it's very problematic to say that because he didn't go up there and fucking shit his pants on national television, it's the best fucking shit ever. That's not so. You praising this nigga for, he caused the death of her husband, and him putting her up there and going, basically, aren't I the greatest? That's technically what he's saying. Aren't your husband is the greatest for something that I shouldn't have did in the first place? You know, that's not the best thing ever. You know, it's not. President Obama have done some things that I thought was the best thing ever. And a lot of times, a lot of these news media would criticize the shit, even shit he did to help people. You know, so yeah, no. I disagree with what a lot of what he says, but coon, no. In my personal opinion, no.
Yeah, and then he went on to defend his comments too, in a different segment where Angela Rye was there. Wait, this shit is 15 minutes long? I really need the minute mark on this shit. Let's see. He went on, the man lied to that woman's face on national TV. He closed by telling her that her fallen husband was probably smiling down from heaven because the standing ovation he just got from a bunch of leering, clap happy vacant suits who can't wait to take healthcare away from poor people. GQ's Jay Willis wrote in response, it's certainly extraordinary, but not in a good way, and it's definitely not presidential. Then there was a segment with him and Angela. Let me see if I can.
One of the president's harshest critics is praising his speech. CNN political commentator Van Jones is applauding what he calls the moment.
Get to the
actual. Just broke stuff. A record. Ryan laid down his life for his friends, for his country.
and for our freedom. And we will never forget Ryan.
For the same man who would not take his ass to any services on Veteran Day, to this same motherfucking, I'm supposed to believe that you care, not trying to be funny and give a shit about the fucking veterans, and you were running for goddamn president and you didn't even take the courtesy, go to the monuments, none of that, but I'm supposed to believe that you really give a fuck about her husband?
And Van Jones joining me now, also with me, CNN political commentator Angela Rye. So Van, you said this quote, that was one of the most extraordinary moments you've ever seen in American politics. Why?
Well, because of the ability for the emotionality to connect with the political agenda of Donald Trump. Usually the emotions that he's playing on are very, very dark, very fear-based. What I think that liberals have to take away from it is that the virus is mutating. He is developing new weaponry that I don't think that liberals expected him to be able to develop so quickly. Most of his speeches are terrible. You have Twitter Trump, which is terrible, and then you have teleprompter Trump, which is barely any better. This was an effective speech. He was able to do things you haven't seen him do before. His agenda is still just as awful. The speech was full of lies and the same kind of stuff he always does. But he now has a set of weapons you've not seen him use before. If he starts doing this kind of thing instead of those crazy rallies over and over again, you begin to create problems for Democrats that I don't think they're ready for.
Okay, one thing I would say there is none of what you described is presidential, and none of what you described is extraordinary. None of what you just, like, the reverence that he described in that first clip we played, that it wasn't one of be careful of this man, he's more dangerous now, he has new tools. It wasn't that. You were praising him. You were essentially praising him, and now you're trying to walk it back on some, like, hey, I didn't say he was the greatest, I just said it was a great moment, and we need to be careful because he changed tones and all this shit. And it's like, nah.
Hey, think about that paycheck. Ain't nobody crazy.
You agree, Angela, with Van, that this was presidential?
I definitely don't think that this is presidential, and it could be that I just don't understand the standard that we're using. But if by presidential we're talking about becoming a leader on the world stage, one that Americans everywhere could be hopeful about and supportive of, then I think the answer is a resounding no. Donald Trump took 61 minutes to tell 51 lies, and they aren't just lies about his record that promised jobs and hope.
What about that specific moment that we're talking about?
Sure, I think that just demonstrates his ability to be a decent human being. But I don't think that overall his speech, this joint address to Congress, demonstrates his ability, nor was it presidential. So, again, I think that we have to go back to the fact that he talked about creating jobs that he did not create. He talks about this one record he has so far while he's been in office that pales in comparison to my president, Barack Obama. So I think, again, when we talk about the standard of being presidential, he's not met that standard. And I'm not willing to give him a pass because the bar is low.
Van?
Well, listen, I appreciate the passion. Part of the thing is that President Obama set a standard, as far as I'm concerned, that's not likely to be met soon.
That's fair.
I don't think President Obama is a standard. We've had some great presidents, and we've had some awful presidents, and then we've had President Trump. And the problem that you have with President Trump is President Trump has not even touched, until now, hasn't even touched the shoe of the worst of them. And suddenly, though, I think Democrats have expected that he's going to stay that bad.
No, I find it interesting, too, like, when you say President Obama had this standard that no other president can live up to, that y'all did criticize President Obama, though. It wasn't just a cakewalk. Like, even with this high bar, he wasn't perfect. He didn't make the world didn't go perfectly for him. Like people were on his ass still, because it was like the measurement for him was an unreasonable, like, I honestly feel like the measurement most people that are critics of Obama have for him is one that's mostly unattainable. Like,
right.
It's not that we have an example. to go off of, where we're like, well, this president was better than him. We just have an example of what we think idealistically would be the best, and we're like, he wasn't that. And then for Trump, it's the exact opposite. It's
right.
I can't imagine a dude worse than this, so everything he does that's not the fucking worst is better. And that is the exact double standard of whiteness in this job and being other in this job. Is when you're white in the ceiling is the floor when you're white. It's just like, oh, this motherfucker didn't trip over itself. What a president. Meanwhile, with Obama, they'd be like, is he too professorial? I mean, he's quoting too many facts. He's staying on the teleprompter. He's giving us too much information. Can a voters even understand what he's saying? Like, you were getting that from what, and that was from the people that claimed to like the dude. That were like, he's too composed. He never gets angry. That kind of shit. Meanwhile, Trump is like, yo, he didn't piss on anyone's face tonight.
Right.
What a great moment. So yeah, I think, Van Jones' defense of this shit is sad. It's like, to me, I feel like I watched that person get, like, just try to capitulate to whiteness and to the pressures of that CNN environment to the point where they're useless now. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, 'cause he broke.
You essentially are useless in this discussion because you're giving credit to the lowest bar, which means no one can really take you seriously. And the only thing you got is your credibility, man. Like, that's the only thing you got. Like, the one thing that enables you to not be on CNN and to go somewhere else and to be Mr. Van Jones, we all respect, is your credibility. So you lost it for whether it was for the check or whether it was for the fear or whether you really have talked to so many crazy ass racist white people that you have essentially are like, I got to find a way to survive by finding a middle ground. You know, there's a reason he got a show on Angela Rodon.
Come on.
You know what I mean? There's a reason that some of these people are permanent fixtures of CNN and other black people won't be, you know, because of the mass unblackening of the media and the fact that they don't want these black people taking racism to task every week because they're complicit in it. At any rate, I'm not going to play the rest of the thing, but I think you guys get the point. And yeah, it's disappointing, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Like, I think people get a little too loose with some of the accusations.
Me too.
Cause I want to be able to, I'm criticizing this dude, but I'm not saying nothing else he's ever said counts. Cause he has said a lot of, at the minimum, a lot of racially aware shit that I'm glad he was on the panel to discuss. But this shit with, calling Trump presidential was a complete flub. All right, let's get into some lighter white people news and we'll get out of here. So the rest is white people news brought to you by Bevel, the first and only shaving system designed specifically for coarse, curly hair and sensitive skin. Step up your shave game and say goodbye to razor bumps. Get clearer and smoother skin with Bevel. All right, it's time to go outside. It's already stopped snowing and the snow's all melted here, guys.
I clutch just that quick.
Right, and you don't want to go outside with all that stuff all over your face looking all rough, looking like a topographical map. You need to go ahead and get smooth, because that's what the people like. They like smooth peoples. So go to getbevel.com/tbgwt today. All right, make sure you support the show. It helps us out when you do it. Shout out to the people that like tweet them and stuff when you get Bevel and you go, this is a great shave. Mm-hmm. All that stuff helps, and it keeps people it keeps our sponsors supporting us. All right, white people news. Giving them the cold shoulder, Justin Bieber snubs Melbourne fans again, failing to show at an ice hockey match organized for him hours after refusing selfies and looking bored on stage. Hmm. Looks like the bad boy is back, y'all. he apparently was bored on stage, and then was bored on stage, and then when fans wanted selfies, he was like, hell no, I'm good. And not content with just snubbing diehard fans, the 20-year-old, damn, he only 20, reportedly also gave a cold shoulder to a prior commitment, failing to show at an ice hockey game organized at his specific request. Hmm. The Canadian singer, an ice hockey fan, was slammed by semi-professional team Melbourne Ice on Sunday, who revealed Bieber failed to show at a match organized for him. Bieber had reportedly asked the team to find a specific stick for him to join in the fun, wanting one with a white grip, not grip tape, and not black. They were running around all day sourcing the hockey stick, but the pop star never arrived. Oh, man.
Aww.
Never say never.
Right.
In a statement released by the club on Sunday, it was revealed the players were very excited about the prospect of playing with and in front of Bieber. As rumblings of a special appearance from visiting music superstar Justin Bieber to join the team began to circulate, plans were put in place for a scrimmage match that no available player was willing to miss. Despite a non-appearance from Bieber, just as the boys prepared to hit the ice, the playing group took the disappointment in stride. The ice hockey no-show followed claims that from fans that the superstar looked miserable while performing to a sold-out crowd in Etihad Stadium on Friday. Maybe he's mad that The Weeknd is with his ex-girl. These days, you know, seem to be the thing that he's most worried about. A day later, again, he came under fire, appearing to snub his devoted believers who gathered outside his hotel for a photo with him. The star appeared to go incognito in a dressed-down look to avoid attention, but an eagle-eyed fan spotted him. Saba told the Sydney Morning Herald that she had been circling the city in search of the pop star, and when she spotted him and rushed over to greet him, when I got out of my car, I ran over to ask for a photo, and that was when he said, "Why are you invading my privacy?"
Mm.
He wasn't in a good mood. He was adamant that he wouldn't take a photo with me. He was not interested in the photo at all. I told him I was going to take the photo anyway. Damn. Fans don't give a fuck. Justin began the Australian leg of his Purpose tour in Perth this week, getting up close and personal with many fans during, before, and after his Perth gig. So, shit, man. That ain't no joke. I told her, don't take this picture anyway, bitch. She went from a believer to just taking this, like, no. I believe you're going to take this picture. Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lawrence are calling off the divorce for now.
Shit, Batman still married?
Mm-hmm. Both actors, 44 years old, announced their separation back in June 2015. They aren't back together. They decided to keep working on their marriage after going through a recent rough patch that nearly led to a permanent split. Jen has called off the divorce. A source close to Gardner tells People in the latest issue she really wants to work things out with Ben. They're going to give things another try. But a source close to the couple says it was a decision they both made. There's always a chance of reconciliation. They always love each other. They are also really, really love their kids, and their kids love their parents.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. So, good for them, man. If y'all can fix that thing, you know. Scarlett Johansson filed for divorce from her French husband, Romain Doriac, amid claims split may lead to custody battle over their daughter, Rose, who is 3 years old.
Aww.
Yeah. After weeks of speculation about the state of her marriage, Hollywood star Scarlett Johansson has filed for divorce from French husband, Romain Doriac. The New York Post, page 6, broke the news story stating that the actress's attorney, Judith Pollard, had served the divorce filings on Doriac's lawyer, Harold Mayerson. The publication claimed that the formal end of the marriage might lead to a nasty custody battle over the couple's 3-year-old daughter, Rose. The NY Post quoted Mayerson as saying that Doriac would like to move to France with his daughter, and Miss Johansson does a lot of traveling. It will be an interesting process. Mm-mm-mm. They started dating in late 2012, and they got married October 1st, 2014, in Montana, following the birth of their daughter. The Avengers star was consistently pictured without her wedding ring for the past several months, and in January, Us Weekly confirmed that the couple had, in fact, separated in the summer of 2016. Mm-mm-mm. After the breakup, the two agreed to an informal co-parenting agreement where they each spent every other week with Rose. But things got more difficult when the actress decided she wanted to alternate a shorter schedule, with her taking the child for 3 days and then the father taking her for 2. The kid was bouncing back and forth, a source told Page 6, when Doriac complained that Johansson's schedule was taking precedence. He was allegedly told that this is what they do in Hollywood. Mm-mm-mm. That's why you gotta be careful marrying these starlets, man.
She was like, I got shit to do.
Just last month, Johansson gave an interview to Playboy, which she spoke about her marriage, becoming a mother, and setting up home in New York, describing it as a huge transition. But while she gushed over her young daughter, she also talked about how much traveling she does with her job and the weight of being legally contracted to another person. I think the idea of marriage is very romantic. It's a beautiful idea, and the practice of it can be a very beautiful thing. I don't think it's natural to be a monogamous person, she said. She out here fucking these niggas. That's what that mean. She already done hit up Chris Evans or somebody.
She was like, I got shit to do.
She like, I gotta be around all these hunky ass Avengers men. I'm supposed to not get a piece? Please. Being married is different than not being married. And anybody who tells you that is the same as lying. It changes things. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful responsibility, but it's a responsibility.
Now that it is.
Despite their separation, Johansson was joined by Duryak, who was also a partner in the venture, at the October opening of her gourmet popcorn store in Paris. The actress happily served up popcorn to the first customers of Yummy Pop in the Marais district. It has been a dream of mine and my family to serve for several years to bring our favorite American snack out to our favorite European city. Scarlett said in a statement at the time of her launch. Well, I guess she wants some other people to pop some seeds, and not him. Her marriage to Duryak wasn't the first time she had slipped on her wedding ring. In September 2008, the Lost in Translation star quietly tied the knot with Canadian actor Ryan Reynolds. Oh, I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. But 2 years later, they announced they were separating and their divorce was finalized July 2011.
On the low, she keeps that shit very, very quiet. I didn't know she was married, and I didn't know she had a child.
Yeah, well, also, you don't really know much about these white people, but also, you know, for Scarlett Johansson, it might be like for her image, you know, it's just.
That's true, too.
You know, a lot of stars want to keep, especially women stars, want to keep this idea of like, I'm not with anybody, I'm attainable to fans, because that shit psychologically works on a lot of men for some reason. But yeah, they got divorced too, and she did have a brief but highly publicized romance with Sean Penn. Ain't that nigga old? I don't know, Hollywood's weird. She had also previously enjoyed a 2-year relationship that ended in 2006 with actor Josh Hartnett, with whom she starred in the film The Black Dahlia. So I guess she keep a bad bitch, so except for this French dude, he was just okay. Yeah, I'm just saying. She's done better in the past. Mama June reveals that she lost 141 pounds before a dramatic standoff with Sugar Bear's new fiance in Not Too Hot.
What?
That's right. Mama June, the mother of Honey Boo Boo.
Who would dip my ham in some honey and put syrup on it and then deep fry Mama June.
Talking to you, Mike. But yes.
I'm sorry. That Mama June?
Yeah, that was Mama June.
Yeah.
Back in the day, she's
Mama June, butter on everything, Mama June.
Well, she got a personal trainer named Kenya, and she finally she lost some weight, and she finally weighs herself for the first time in her new TV show called Not Too Hot on WeTV. She admits she is trying to slim down for her ex-husband Sugar Bear's wedding, which is still months away.
Oh, she's slimming down for his wedding?
I guess so. I hope I'm under 220, she explains, for stepping on the scale. Really, she lost 84 pounds in 8 weeks. She went from 352 pounds to 211 pounds. Woo. The episode begins with June being introduced to a new trainer, Kenya Cooks, who asserts he is willing to do what's necessary to help Mama June lose another 100 pounds. I'm going to kick her ass, Kenya explained, sending Mama June to get ready in 5 minutes. Instead of going into a regular gym.
Can you see these pics?
You want to see them? Okay, yes. Hold on. I'm sorry.
I mean, if you don't mind.
I don't mind. I just wasn't thinking. My fault. Obviously, that would be the appeal of the story, to see the before and after and stuff. That's her before and after pictures. Can you see them?
Mm-hmm. She don't look like the same person.
Yeah, that's a lot of weight to lose, you know? Mm-hmm. Instead of going to a regular gym, they go to a park and use children playground to help her lose weight. Kenya tries to get June pumped up for a workout, but she is less than impressed and walks slowly to the playground. "You are freaking insane," she exclaims. "I don't want to do all this." She's then forced to get down on all fours to do a bear crawl on the grass, as well as a number of different exercises that prove difficult for the reality star.
Good for her. I mean, I know I was making them jokes, but good for her. If that's something that she wants to do, good for her.
Yeah, my thing that's, okay, yeah, good for her. I mean, nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. Here's my problem. What happened with that child molestation shit, and why y'all just back on TV like that didn't happen? That just seems very fucking weird.
I guess you said I didn't molest any kids.
Yeah, but she was like enabling it, and one of her daughters said she was abused by her by Mama June's boyfriend. And
I'm 100% with you.
Like, how the fuck is this on TV again? Like, it's all good. This is like if they had that very special episode of Different Strokes when they went to the bicycle shop, but then the next week they was back with the bicycle shop dude. It'd be like, what? No, you can't be back on TV. You molest kids. That's the end. No more of this. Oh God. They started growing apart. Jaden Smith, 18, and Sarah Snyder, 21, split up after 2 years of dating.
18. So she dated him 16? What? You just said this boy 18.
He's 18, she's 21. They dated for 2 years, so she must have been 19. He must have been 16 when they started dating.
Right.
That is,
yeah, because if this was a girl, people would be up in the fucking, having a fucking fit. He was underage.
That's true. If it was Willow Smith, people would be like, what the fuck?
People, that's why when you said, I was like, that don't make no sense.
Yeah. Maybe they just feel that he's wise beyond his age, because he always says weird shit.
I don't give a fuck.
Right.
Yeah, she shouldn't have did that. Wait till you turn 18.
Apparently, they had been on the rocks for a while and stopped having shared interest. Only Jaden Smith can be like, I had a conscious uncoupling at 18.
Yes, Jaden. I like his weird ass. People give him a hard time, but all these weird ass white kids named Apple, Peaches, and Orange, and Pear out here having a good time. You leave Will Smith and them kids alone.
Mm-hmm. Wait, so which one, are you okay with this or you not okay with this?
I am not okay with this.
Okay.
But leave him alone for being weird.
Not for
her having sex with another child. No, right. That I'm not okay with.
Now,
to be weird.
I don't know if when they were or were not having sex. I mean, I guess technically they could have been in a relationship and not been having sex. What do you think?
No, I'm not buying it.
And also, I think the legal age of consent is 18 in LA.
Yeah, like I said.
But I don't know the rules between age difference, because, you know, they always have that, like, you can be 16 and date a 17 or 18-year-old, but you can't be 16 and date a 21-year-old, you know? So I don't know what 19 and 16.
Like I said, call me old-fashioned, but I'm like, if y'all was in a relationship, there was some fucking going on. I don't believe it. Well, I don't believe y'all was just holding hands and googling their eyes at each other while he read to you weird poems. No.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah,
I'm not buying it.
It always feels like with these famous people, nobody cares. Because, right. I mean, the Kardashians had, like, Tyga dating the whatever that one.
That girl, and I have a problem with that. But everybody else, they're like, this shit is normal. No, it's not.
Yeah. So, I don't know. It says, federal law makes it a criminal to engage in a sexual act with another person between the age of 12 and 16 if they are at least 4 years younger than you. So, this is legal there. Because they're 3 years apart, not four. So, apparently, he could be 16 and she could be 19 and they could date.
I guess I don't have any kids, but as a parent, I'm like, nope, you grown, bitch, beat it. Mm. You are grown. Get away from my child.
But yeah, apparently, they broke up is what we were trying to say. And they have a lot of pictures where they were having a lot of PDA. It was a lot. They was kissing everywhere. Like, that's how I guess, and she's a model, so I guess you know, maybe that was part of it.
Maybe my stance is too hard on that old fashioned whatever, but nope, no ma'am.
While not unexpected, the couple always seemed to be sharing a loving wavelength as they packed in the PDA seemingly everywhere they went. Snyder even confirmed their relationship with a saucy snap of Jaden grabbing her behind in a black and white Instagram post. She captioned the photo with a very brief lit. Oh, him grabbing her booty and she wearing like, okay.
So I'm trying to tell you, with no holding hands. Yeah, they were holding hands all right.
All right. Dude, you went full black on this. What's happening?
I'm sorry. I guess
fast ass girl. No, like, what is happening right now?
No, it's not that. It's just for the fact that I want the standard to be the same for males and females, because I know if this was a female and this dude, wouldn't nobody give a fuck about the
statutory laws. I mean, society like would not be necessarily comfortable, but Callie definitely got a pass. Callie and Tiger, people let that shit slide. The whole time I was like, I didn't know people were okay with this, and I thought that age difference was bigger.
Okay.
And somehow people were like, it, I mean, he can be on the TV show, they can be in all the blogs together, and that shit was, at no point did people go, this shit seems illegal. Or when they did, nothing happened.
Like I said, I'm just an old arty farty, because I don't give a fuck. My stance is the same across the board. No.
All right.
No, you're grown. Leave these children alone.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I don't care. I'm done now.
I'm sorry, baby.
The point of this news is to be fun, right, and light.
I got fucked with. My bad.
And this feels very not my fun bad. And light.
It got 100, even though it wasn't meant to be put in nobody's category. I'm sorry.
All right. All right. Well.
I'm sorry. And you know, and maybe just me, but I feel like, you know, once you get maybe a year or two, but once you get like 3 and 4, I feel like there's a large difference in maturity age and maturity there in my mind. So maybe that's just me. I'm sorry. Yeah, I didn't mean turn white people news to fucking with Karen.
No, I mean, if that's too big, it's your opinion. If it's too big a age difference, I think it's really up to the parents and the people in those kids' lives.
That's
I
true
mean,
now.
If the Smiths are okay with their son dating somebody that's 3 years older than them, I don't think that's the end of the world. It's not illegal. I don't know. I think people should try to have healthy relationships. I think at that age, a couple years difference makes a huge difference in people's lives, right. But it's not illegal, and individually you have to judge for your own children and for yourself. So if they were together 5 years from now and they were fucking 3 years apart, it wouldn't make anybody a difference that, you know, he was 24 and she was 27 or something. But at 16, 17, 18 is such a changing time for people. And mm-hmm. You know, you worry that someone might get taken advantage of or something like that.
Right. And I think that's my perspective and where I'm coming from.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people go, in maturity level, it is a huge difference.
I mean, those are his parents, and they involved in his life. I don't think this is some...
Like I said, if they're fine with it, that's cool. But I know me personally, I have a problem with it.
So you'd be like, you can't date her if it was your son?
You're goddamn... Nope.
Okay.
Nope. And the same thing for my daughter. Nope.
All right.
That's why I ain't got no kids.
No problem.
Nope. Because, like I said, it's to me the age and maturity is a wide one, and I know it ain't nothing but a few years. But think between what the fuck you were doing at 16 and what you were doing at 17, 18, 19. You've lived different experience. Like, it's completely different in my mind.
I can't speak. I think it really goes to the individual kid. I just don't think it's a broad sweeping thing. You know, there's different maturity levels. Your 16-year-old might be able to handle some shit that my 16-year-old playing with Transformer ass would not, you know, to be honest. So, I mean, you turned me out to 16 and it worked out. So, I don't know. I don't know why I saw this judgment coming out all of a sudden, but.
But what was I saying? That's completely different.
I'm just saying. Anyway.
I ain't like I was 18.
That's why you stay away from my 16-year-old son.
Right, or my 16-year-old daughter. Hey, I'm letting you know, ain't no bias here. It is equal opportunity.
Police investigating a death in a Northeast Kansas City fire are confronted by a man with a sword. They, wow, you don't expect that. was it like season one of Daredevil when that motherfucker burned that shit down and ninjas was there? Police are investigating the death of a person whose body was found inside a burning building on Wednesday. While police were investigating the death, a man confronted officers with a large sword or a machete. Officers were able to calm the man down. He was taken to police station for questioning. Firefighters found the dead body in the burning shed or a garage behind a tan two-story building near 9th and Van Brunt Athletic Fields. It may take some time to identify the body as male or female. A dog that burned in the fire also was found dead. At this time of the incident, it's a death investigation. Damn. The dog and the damn shame they did to that dog.
That goddamn shame.
All right, we'll be back tomorrow, guys. Thank you so much for listening. We appreciate y'all. Until then, 4 o'clock today, having a nerd off.
Mm-hmm.
It's gonna be me, Karen, Najayla Ree, and Amber P from Black Sexy Geeky and Mental. So
that'll be fun. We'll be doing a live show. For those of you that are premium, look for the email.
Yeah, I already sent it out, so it should be out there. And who knows, I might just share it on social media with everybody.
Yeah,
so
might
follow us on Twitter and Facebook, and maybe you'll get invited to hang out and watch the ladies talk about nerd stuff.
I know.
All right, guys, we'll talk to y'all later. Until then, I love you.
I love you too. Mwah.